Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody and happy Tuesday night. I hope everybody is having as much fun preparing for Thanksgiving as I am. I love cooking. It is one of my favorite things in the whole wide world. And I spent the day cleaning the room for Thanksgiving and literally just slowly preparing things, getting things ready. I made the cranberry sauce today. That way it has 2 days to chill and come together. All kinds of stuff. I really get into it. I love it. There is nary a store-bought thing other than the ingredients in my home for Thanksgiving. So I hope all of you guys get to get together with your loved ones. Have a great evening. Have a great afternoon. Whatever it is that you do for Thanksgiving, I hope that you have a great one. We have a great show for you guys tonight. In the second part of the show, we will be joined by our good friend Scott Ertz. He is the host of Plug Hits Live and F5 Live Refreshing Technology with Avram Pilch. We will be talking in the second part about AI, one of my favorite topics. I've got my own AI computer that I built over here that does all of my research offline. We'll be talking about the difference between online and offline AI, and specifically generative AI, things like that. There are a lot of fears out there. As most of you know, most of this show is dedicated to demystifying these topics, trying to kind of unravel the nets that have been woven by people to snare minds and make people live in webs of fear. So we kind of help unravel some of that tonight. Sorry if you enjoy your AI fear bubble, folks, but like I say on the show all the time, like I say in the second part, you can guarantee AI will be as smart as the average person reading the internet. Take that as a good thing or a bad thing, however you want to take it. But it's all about the data field. It's all about the data that AI uses to garner that information. And we're going to be getting into some of that even tonight, because we'll be talking about data in the first segment with our friend CJ Arabia. She is the chief field investigator for Southern California MUFON. We will be talking about some of their cases of interest, which are many. That is actually one of the largest regions in the country for UFO UAP reporting. So welcome to the show for the first time. Hello. CJ, how are you this evening?
Everything you've said is 100% true, and I'm doing very well. Thank you.
It is always great chatting with you. We're friends on social media. We've met at the conferences, yeah. Things like that. So yeah. Great to finally have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I'm very glad to hear that you've taken up the mantle for Earl as far as doing the radio show for Southern California MUFON and all that kind of stuff, doing the podcast. Yeah. So,
yeah. Didn't really have a choice.
Well,
just
it's
thrown into the fire.
Well, it's an important mission, as is outreach for stuff like this, and even having these kind of conversations, yeah. Because this is, like I say on the show all the time, and whenever I speak at conferences, research does not happen in a vacuum. By definition, it can't happen in a vacuum. So you've got to be willing to have conversations. You've got to be willing to challenge hypotheses, challenge data sets that are given. And you guys get all kinds of reports there in Southern California. What brought you to joining MUFON to begin with, CJ?
Well, I was just enjoying my summer watching some UFO shows while sitting outside with my son, which I don't even normally do. But one of them mentioned MUFON and a few other things, and I thought, you know, I never even thought about it. Maybe I should Google that UFO I saw as a kid and see did anybody else report something in the 70s, what in San Diego, what was being reported in the 70s. And, like, the article that came up was basically the exact description I've given my entire life since I was a child of as a kid, I called it a translucent oval metal cloud, but it was like a silver oval inside of a mist or a cloud. And there was like some colors around it. And it was like 20 feet over my, like right there. Like, you know, like wow. I hear the description now that I take cases, like I could have thrown a rock at it or just above the trees, just above the telephone poles, that height, that's the exact height. They love to, I guess, hang out. Cause I guess it's, you know, it's probably off the radar and easy to hide out. And, like right over my head, and I never really spoke about it. But after I found this article, I said to my partner, I was like, I'm going to report this to MUFON. I have evidence with me now. So
yeah.
So I reported it. I met Earl, and, you know, the rest is history. Then I joined MUFON, and then I became a field investigator, and then I was forced to become higher than that. I always told Earl, I'm never getting above a field investigator. I don't want any responsibility. I don't want any part of an organization. I'm not interested. And I don't want to do podcasts. I don't want to be a talking head on podcasts.
Yeah, that's
like something I'm never going to do, Earl. Yeah, I told Earl, I never. I'm so glad you're here because I don't want to do any of that, Earl.
Yeah.
So I guess the last laugh is on me. I'm a talking head on a podcast.
You bring up an important point, though, with what you're talking about, and specifically your verve and excitement with your sighting. Was your sighting explained, CJ?
No. I mean, there's no. It took place in the 70s. I was walking home from the bus stop in East County, San Diego, on like old Highway 80. If you're familiar, just past Dunbar Road. If you live in the East County, San Diego, you just did a spit take when I said Dunbar Road and old Highway 80. I was like, I'm like in the first grade, and I'm walking with this boy, and I didn't even see it. He says to me, he kind of pushes me under this tree and covers my mouth and goes, shh. And points up and says, they're watching us. And I look up and it's like right there. Like it's silent, like dead silent. Like I would have never in a million years seen it if he didn't point it out to me. And then it was like fading. It was like there.
Interesting.
And then it would get translucent and it would disappear. And then it would be there again. And then it was like fading. Like, I mean, it's so bizarre to describe it. And I thought, all these weird details about it, I always thought made it seem fake because I never heard this on a TV show or anything, you know. But, you know, when I talked to Earl, he was like, yeah, no, this is all stuff we've heard many times. And then it like disappeared. And then people always go, oh, what'd you do next? I just have no idea what happened. The memory ends when it disappears. That's the end of it. And I couldn't tell you what happened next. But it's never been a dream. Like, I have dreams I remember from childhood, and I definitely remember them. It's not, you know, it was like something I've told everyone, including I told my partner, we've been together about 20 years, Mather. I've told him over the years, over and over, and, you know, he's go, sure, I know you saw something. And I'm like, I did see something.
Yeah.
Like, not just something. Like, not, you know, because it's just like, it's hard. He'll say he's a UFO muggle, but it's really hard for people who have never seen anything uncanny, as he says. He says, I've lived a pedestrian, I've never seen anything uncanny. But he's the kind of person who was very moved by that movie that just came out that we will not discuss.
Okay. Well, yeah, so and you know, I haven't had a chance to see Age of Disclosure yet, folks, is what she's talking about. Feel free to go check that out. It is now out on Amazon Prime. And like you said, for those of us who are within the research communities, things like that, not really a lot of new hard revelation or anything like that.
No,
but
nothing new. Don't fork out the $25 if you're in the UFO world or you know UFO news and you're expecting to have a revelation. This is not for you. Unless you want to show it at Thanksgiving or the holidays with your family, that to me, that's where this movie is going to come in, is over the holidays. When grandpa says, should we put a movie on? And like some grandkid goes, put on that new Age of Disclosure, you know, and the whole family watches it. Like, I was saying we're going to need a lot of support groups for people, because these are regular people that are not entertaining the idea of UFOs at all, or aliens or whatever, biologics, whatever they want to call it, whatever, Luis Elizondo in his tiny little suits. I wish I could put Luis Elizondo in a suit that fit him. You'll see when you see it. Yeah. His suit is one size too small. He just likes a tight suit, and that's fine. There's a lot of Luis Elizondo posing in a tight suit. Anyone who's seen it, it knows exactly. Anyone who's watching right now who's seen it is laughing and going,
well, right. I mean, that is his style, most definitely.
Skinny jeans. On a guy built like a barrel, skinny jeans on a little stocky guy.
But in all reality, once again, the plus side is that it opens that conversation in a different way for people that may not be ready for that conversation, and may not.
That's what I think it's perfect for. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to you mentioned earlier, like, hey, evidence, things like that. That's one of the things we talk about on the show all the time, is the difference between data and evidence, that kind of stuff. And the idea of making a report, because yes, number one, always go make your report, folks. Feel free to go to any MUFON site. If you're in Southern California, go to SoCalMUFON.com. That's where you can go. There is literally a UFO page there. We have a reporting system on Curious Realm and Curious Research. But
and report it everywhere. Send it to everyone. Go to all of the places. Report it.
That's right. And as it says on here, you know, do not report a UFO if you've observed the following. And it goes into Starlink and gives you a video, Falcon 9 rockets, all kinds of things. Now let's start getting into, I guess, walk us through how a report gets to somebody like you, CJ, and how you end up handling the report once it comes through, before we start getting into the actual cases.
Sure. So someone's going to go through the website. And by the way, if you're listening, we're going to have it in 2026, MUFON's going to have an app, and it's going to be a lot easier to report. Right now, we're still on the old system. So just get ready. Like, they've been timing it, and you can make a report in like 3 minutes or something. I know right now it's cumbersome, but we appreciate your reports. We'd have nothing to do without your reports. So they come in and they get sent through a main MUFON. Everyone takes a look at every report that comes in, and then they get assigned to our state director, who is Gino. And Gino will then assign it to a field investigator, or if he's busy, I might help assign cases to field investigators. And there's also ERT cases, which is experience or resource team cases. And some of them are just straight up, someone saw a light in the sky or a craft. And some of them are more like an experience, or they feel they've been contacted by an extraterrestrial or some kind of an entity. And then that goes to a different team. So we'll first take a look at the case, and it just kind of gets sent to where it needs to go, depending on what's involved, how much involvement, are there beings? Is it just a craft somebody saw in the sky? So then you start your investigation once you get it. So we have timelines, like any business, you know, like we're hoping to close them out in a certain amount of time. And the truth is, most cases, we should be able to close them out in a certain amount of time. Like, you can look up the astronomical. I can look up every Starlink launch out here. You know, is there a meteor shower? Did somebody see a fireball race through the sky? And there was also a meteor shower, you know, and we have to go by, what is it most likely? We're not going to have, like, for sure 100% it was this. But if there's a meteor shower and you saw a fireball go through the sky, odds are you might have seen a shooting star. So, you know, we just kind of go with what's going on. And we look at the flights. We look at the all the craft that are in the sky, looking before, after, just in case you got your time wrong. You know, I always ask people, is this a specific time? Some people have videos, which is great because we can get the EXIF data off your phone, which will tell us exactly what time you took it, exactly when it was taken and where you were. All that kind of information comes in. And then we reach out to the person who filed it, and we get the case going. We try to take everybody's testimony in person, whether it's on the phone or some people like to do Zoom like this with people. But we reach out and ask every single person who reports, like, would you like to talk? Can I take your, and sometimes it's not even necessary, but we give everybody a chance. Sometimes people just want to talk. And sometimes you find out, you know, more information, even if it is something simple, something else could happen too. So, yeah. And then we got to make a call at some point. Got to figure out what we thought it was based on the evidence, you know, and some people have a lot of evidence and some people have nothing but a story from the 70s, you know, that they remember like it was yesterday because something happened to them that was so out of the usual, so yeah, out of the norm that it changed them forever. Like when I was a kid, like I didn't know what it was. I didn't really know the word UFO at that point in my life, but I knew I'd seen something weird. And I remember in high school seeing a show about Betty and Barney Hill and going, ah, that's the guys that I saw. That's like the same kind of guys I saw. So, you know, there's those of us out there and you're just kind of watching. You're looking for something that you can relate to that tells you that what you saw was real and other people have seen it too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that point of relation is, I think, hugely important. Once again, it's a big part of the conversation, and what we have to do as investigators is be able to openly listen to people without that judgment. And I mean, you know, frequently we have to give people the information that what they have reported or what they've cited, what they've taken a picture of, taken a video of, is something explainable. You know, but like I typically tell people, like, hey, just remember you have now contributed to the scientific process of study of this, though it be in the category of known quantitative, that only helps us expand the category of known quantitative, which only further narrows the possibility of phenomena. You know,
and they've learned. They also, as a member of the public, they just learned something. You know, they just learned what Starlink looks like. And next time they make a report, it'll be based on new evidence as well. And that's part of it too, is we're educating the public. I often tell the public, like, go get Flight Radar 24 app or any other, you know, flight app. You can point it at the sky and it'll say, oh, what you're looking at is helicopter number so-and-so for the news, or what it'll give you, like it's a Southwest flight with, you know, 200 people on your, like, it's like exact. And the same, there's also the, you know, we use the different ones for the celestial, for there's a whole bunch of them out there.
Stellarium, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Stellarium. Yeah, exactly. We all, so like get those and aim them at it, you know, like if you're seeing, if especially if you're someone who's decided you're going to now look at the sky and find something to report, like do it educated, go get these apps, point, like, do what I would do, point it at the thing, take your time. And once you see, like, you know, if it looks like a star, it might be a star.
Well, and you know, that brings up a point, which is sometimes it is just stars, you know, and even as somebody who takes photographs of the night sky regularly, there are things out there that, you know, especially once you hit the point of extreme zoom on a cell phone, things like that. There is artifact.
It's going to blow out every light at that point. And like when you've zoomed in your cell phone to a far distance, every light is going to look like a magical orb that's changing shape in front of your eyes. Like, so you can't.
Here is a prime example. This is a purplish orb with yellow colors, things like that. This is actually Venus out of focus in my camera. You know, but it's a prime example of what many people post online, especially with almost no data, CJ, where it's like, hey, I took this in my backyard. And this is the example that I give on the show regularly, is this video right here, which, like I say all the time, if I posted this with, you know, hey, I recorded this in my backyard last night, I would probably get a lot of responses on social media of, hey, I saw that too. I've recorded these, all kinds of stuff. Now, what you're looking at for the listeners out there is an image of a multicolored orb, black in the middle, undulating around the edge, flashing colors, multiple colors, moving from the top left of the screen to the bottom right in not quick order, but not floating order either. Like you said, there's a lot of people that turn in pictures of the Dog Star Sirius. That is exactly what that is. That is the dog.
It looks amazing. Yes. That is amazing.
That's the Dog Star Sirius out of focus on my telescope. It was the third star that I was aligning my telescope to lock sync.
It looks like it's dancing around. Yeah. Depending on where it is in, you know, as the Earth is turning and stuff, it will look like it's moving around. It'll look like it's pulsing. Now it's red, now it's blue, now it's green. And people are sure they're seeing an orb that's dancing for them, you know, and it's like, it's Sirius the Dog. And even when you say it's Sirius the Dog,
well,
I mean, I try not to rain on anyone's parade.
If somebody asks me,
I'll tell them, but like, you know, sometimes people just want to make a report and feel good about it. And that's fine with me.
It's also the fact of until you know, yes, it is an amazing moment. It's wild. Like when that happened on my camera, because once again, I was aligning my telescope. So the motion that you see is actually the star itself magnified by 8 times. So you're actively watching the rotation of the Earth magnified by 8 times. That's what's making it move. Is the actual rotation of the Earth just magnified. But without all of that data, without that information, I took it facing southeast from Austin, Texas at this time of night on this day.
I know. No one ever tells you what direction they're facing. Sometimes the time is a guess.
Well, and that's just it. At that point, it can become a hunt and a peck, but you can very easily identify the fact that it's something that is a regularly observable object that, once again, is out of focus or at the focus distance of the camera itself, and especially whenever you see octagons, hexagons in them, things like that. Like, that is definitely at the end of focus on an actual lens that has an iris on it. That's just how that looks. So it's, and yeah, we do.
You haven't even gotten into bugs and birds flying quickly through a photo and what they look like and how they can affect a photograph.
Yeah.
Those are just some basic night sky, you know, and that is our most popular in Southern California. You know, the majority of the reports come in as starlight.
Yeah, well, and that's just it, you know, especially there with the ocean view, things like that. You have a rapidly changing temperature variant over the ocean come dusk and twilight, things like that. So you start seeing sparkles and temperature inversions in a totally different way than you would during the day. So let's start getting into some of the actual cases that you sent us this evening to talk about.
Yes, exactly. Okay, great. So I dug through. Now, this is the thing. There's so many cases of interest you can get into. So I'm just going to share some cases of mine that I think are very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So let's start with, hold on. Let me see if I can find, I had a little document here in advantage of the different shapes. Let's see, is this the one? No, that's not. So in the area, basically, like the shapes that people see the most of are going to be like triangles seem to be the number one. Well, the number one reported is going to be starlight. But what I like to look at then is what is the actual unidentified. It's like, just because most of the reports come in as starlight doesn't mean those are the ones that are unidentified. The ones that come back the most unidentified are going to be like a black triangle or triangles in general, these kind of shapes. So that is our highest. When you think of the black triangle, like we get like 25, we've got thousands of star-like objects, but very few of those are UFOs or, you know, unidentified. It's whereas with the triangles, we don't get as many reports of them and they have a higher yield of unidentified.
All right.
So why don't we start with 144732, and this is just an AI rendering that a girl made for me. And this is just like your something we get a lot of, which is a mother and daughter cruising through Santiago Canyon on their way home. It's like 11 at night. The daughter and mother both see two black triangles hovering over the car. They fly in front of them. Both of them get a visual of them. They pull over and check it out. And they're afraid. They're like alone. There's two women alone in this canyon. And if you know anything about Santiago Canyon, it's in the Santa Ana Mountains range, and you can look it up on Google Maps if you want. And it's a short like peninsula shaped mountain range. And it's near the coast in California, and it runs, you know, kind of north to south along the coast. And it goes from Los Angeles down through Orange County, Riverside. And then it just connects with more mountains that go to San Diego. And if you are flying, whether you're a ET or our government, it's a great place to fly a craft like that and stay stealth, stay under the radar where no one's going to see you. Great. Two of the cases I have right now, I don't have images for, but they're just like the classic triangles, and they've been here forever. So 1978, we have a woman and her boyfriend. He pulls into the driveway. She stays in the car. He runs in to do something, and she glances up, and over the house next door is a triangle hovering silently alone. She's staring at it. She keeps glancing at the door, waiting for him to come out to see if he's going to be there to see it. She's staring at it. And then he opens the door to step out, and she looks back up, and it's just gone instantly, like just instantly gone the minute he opens the door. So May 1986, another one in the spring of 86, about 11 p.m., a man in Santa Monica walking his dog at night. He turns the corner of Euclid in Arizona and sees a huge black triangle with seven dim orange lights lining the left and the right sides, but not the back. So maybe it was a V, like the Phoenix lights or something. It's hard to see, but he says a triangle of the stars are what was missing, and it moved slowly. He says 10 to 15 miles an hour all the way out until it went over the ocean. He was trying to run to keep up with it. He couldn't keep up with it, but silently, wow, about 200 feet over his head. You know, like there's no reason. Everyone who makes a report is like, my information can't get out, right? No one can ever.
200 feet.
Like everyone still wants their anonymity. There's nothing, you know, it headed toward Arizona and away from me, meaning Arizona Street. Then we'll go to the Chevron, which is 134190, if you want to bring that image up. Now, these are some gentlemen on patrol at a military base in the middle of the night. And it's a national training center, and pretty much everybody ends up there before they see combat. And they're looking out. I think it's like 2 in the morning, 2:22 in the morning. They're looking out, and on the mountain range away across from them, which is about 2 miles away, there is a light shining down at the top of the mountain range and kind of following it. And they're thinking, is that a helicopter? We should know about that. There's nothing here that should be in the sky. He told me, we live as if we're in combat. So if anyone was doing any sort of an exercise, they would know about it. He said it was suspicious. If anything, I was like, yeah, that sounds very suspicious. A light shining down on the mountain next to your thing. So he's watching it. They're staring at it. And he and his partner are just talking like, what is that? What is it doing? What is that? And just zoop, it's right over them. So it covers a distance of 2 to 3 miles he's like that, he said. And then it's 1,000 feet away from them. Wow. And now that light that was on the mountain is shining upon them. And they're staring at it, and then the light reverses and shoots back up, and then the craft shoots up in an instant, gone into space. And he said there was like a ring of light, like a smoke ring, that slowly drifted outward, He said it was like a mile and a half wide, and then we couldn't see it anymore. And he said, we sat there silently watching all of this, and we turned to each other and said, we will never speak of this ever again. And agreed to it. And then he reported and said, can you look up my partner's name and see if he wanted to see if the other guy reported it. So, you know, he's like, I just want to know. And that's what most people make a report. They just want to know, like, am I crazy? Or did anyone else see this? Did I imagine this thing that, even I report, like, I would love to hear someone else who saw.
You know, it's funny because one of the things we talk about regularly is the idea that these experiences, though they're frequently shared with other people, are rarely talked about with those other people. There are some circumstances where they are, but the great majority of the time, people do not talk about it. It leads to all kinds of issues in relationships, families, all kinds of stuff. Me and my best friend from high school, Billy, Hey, Billy, if you're listening, we saw something one New Year's Eve, and I will forever in my life say it was a classic UFO. It was an object. It was flying, and we could not identify what it was. It was no discernible craft or shape. It wasn't a sphere or a disc or a V or anything like that. It was in a large, about the size of one, two school buses. Just a large amorphous shape flying through the sky over West Houston, blocking out stars, things like that. We could see from we lived over near the Mack Hike dealership, things like that. So we could see the shape of it from the lights from the freeway, everything else, but it was blotting out the stars behind it as it went. And just recently,
well, that's another huge category is other. Like, there's a ton of reports that are none of these.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't until, we've hung out, we've had beer, we've hung out for decades since then, man. I just turned 50.
Never talked about
right?
It.
Yeah. Yeah, like not until the last 2 years. He writes horror short stories and things like that, and wrote a short story about it and contacted me with the manuscript and was like, "Hey man, you remember that New Year's Eve where we saw that thing?" I'm like, "Hell yeah, I remember that night." And we've talked about it since. But yeah, for years, like 20 years almost,
we
CJ.
Talk about
we never
it. We
spoke
just
don't
about bring it. Up.
Never
yeah,
spoke
people
about.
Don't. That's a very common behavior. People will say, I know this sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I saw that thing as a kid. I don't ever remember talking about it to anyone. Just silently seeing things in pop culture. Like, I remember when Whitley Strieber's book came out and I saw the cover and I thought, as a child, I thought, they don't really look like that. But I don't know what they look like. I don't know why I thought that. Like, yeah. You know, so... I don't know. I'm like, what do I know? What do I remember? What did I see that was different from what he saw? You know what I mean? Like, why do I have that judgment?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, even with that in mind, the whole idea of how it affects you is different for everybody. Even if you both experienced the same thing. Yeah, the way you handle that and process that in your reality is completely different.
And,
you know,
yeah.
So
I mean, I do spend time wondering, like, what are they doing? You know, are they eating dinner somewhere right now? Like, you know, like I try to think of life on their planet. Like, do they have holidays? What do they do? It can't just be that what the astronauts do in the ships and stuff. They must have a culture somewhere and something's going like, but my partner never thinks that. He never thinks for a second about what ET is doing or.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that brings something up, CJ, because your experience was very close. Just over tree level, things like that. The experience that you were just talking about with this officer, we're a couple hundred feet off the ground. How frequent is it that the cases that you guys investigate are that kind of proximity where people... are that close to something? Because that's not far, man. Like that for me in my industry, that's a cable, like 200
feet. Yeah, no, those
okay?
are those.
That's
it's
small.
Rare. It's rare. Yeah, no, they're normally in like my Mather teases me because after I first started working for MUFON, I said no dot is too small. I will investigate every dot in the sky. You know, like because a lot of them are dots. Like a
That's
lot
right.
of them are a dot of light. And
That's right.
I'll investigate it, but that is most of them. But when you get one that's up close, whether there's evidence or not, you know, you can really tell when someone's life has been changed when they're like, I've been Googling. I've been on all the local social media pages. Seeing, did anyone else see that? You know, like. People don't just do that. Like you have your mind, our caveman mind is trying to figure out what did I see? How can I explain that so I can sleep tonight? Like, and that, you know, you can hear it in people's testimony. You can hear it in their descriptions.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And you can definitely tell, when something has affected somebody in such a way, where the norm of life has been interrupted. In that kind of way. So, now what kind of cases have you investigated, I know you have the experience, a resource team, things like that, but mm-hmm. how many cases of abduction do you guys get within a year? Is that,
you know, I imagine don't know it's the exact figures. It's very, we keep that information as not searchable in the regular database. It's so confidential, the experiencers, that it's not something I can access. Even we get monthly statistical emails and they don't include that information because people in the, who report that kind of intimate contact, it's just kept very anonymous. And, but they come in all the time, you know, maybe not as many as these star-like objects, but, you know, they're just coming through. They just roll through. And we've got, I think in Southern California, we have 5 members of the experiencer resource team. And, you know, everybody gets a case. They're coming in. And that's not even, you know, a lot of people don't report them, you know, as well. Like a lot of people don't report this stuff. And, you know, the truth is you can report it. We've got information, like we're not here, you know, we can't fix anything, but like we can help you get in like with a support group. Like Yvonne Smith is in Southern California. If you're in another part of the country, there's other people that do it.
Yep.
Some of the meetings are online, but we're here to help if that happens. But I do not know the exact number, but it's common. They roll in.
Well, and that's just it. That's the point, is that there are numerous types of cases that come in regularly for you guys. And the plus side, once again, is that, yes, y'all do keep that confidential. So if you're out there, if you've had an experience like that, folks, if you have been wanting to come forward, trying to come forward, but are afraid to release your identity, let that be known, know that MUFON is confidential in that kind of way. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that many people in the community actively complain about sometimes, is the lack of being able to do that. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of reasons to keep that stuff under wraps.
Oh, for sure. Work, all kinds of things. There's a lot of people you don't want that. And maybe in the future it's coming. We've got movies like Age of Disclosure, stuff like this, where it'll be more common. But like, most people don't. You know, let's say you're adopting a child, you know, you don't need the social worker going, oh, that guy's in all the UFO stuff, or, you know, like, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff where you have a lawsuit, you know, and you're like, you know, the lawyer looks it up and is like, well, this guy believes in UFOs. Why should we trust it? You know, like nobody wants that kind of attention. And I think that's the kind of attention everyone's afraid of. And maybe we'll get there at one point. But yeah, it is very confidential. And, I don't know, there's people all over the country. You know, we've got the East Coast folks. It's just most of the states. And if not, we have people that will cover the state. So if you have an experience in that way, just report it. We're there for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now let's start getting into some of the orb reports that you guys have. We've got you for about another 20 minutes or so.
Okay. But you tell me when to stop talking.
Please go right ahead and start.
Okay. I'm going to start. Let's go over to, let's see. Okay, yeah, let's go to 138429 if you want to show those images. So a man moving some items from his car to his house when he hears a military chopper. He's in San Diego. It's September 9th in the evening, and it's not uncommon, obviously, to hear a military helicopter in San Diego. But he catches a light out of the corner of his eye, and he realizes the helicopter's following him, so he pulls out his phone and records what you're right. That's the video, I think.
Yes, it is the video.
Yeah, and then you'll see. Oh, wait, no, sorry. That's the different one. That's the one at the end. Did we put the wrong number on that? 138. Let me
see. This is 429.
Yeah. Okay. We labeled them wrong. I messed it up. Okay.
That's
look
okay.
for the other. You know why? There's 2 videos, and you said the video.
Oh, okay.
But there's 2 videos. Did you only get 1 video?
Let me check my system real quick.
There's one that's in the phone. It's a long, skinny video.
Okay.
And if not, I can
give me just a second. Let's go into another one real quick while I track that down.
Yeah, go into it. So we'll go back to this. So what I found out about this case, and see, and maybe I didn't send it to you. Maybe this is my fault and I need to drop it to you right now. But I was looking at case 138734, which is a couple of photographs a guy sent me. He goes out to take his dog in the early morning hours. It's like 4 a.m. and it's trash day. So he has to go and carry the dog's poop up to the dumpster that's out at the street. When he gets out to the dumpster, he looks up and there is an orange globe hovering about 100 feet above the dumpster. It's about 30 feet across.
Interesting.
You know, it's like a fire. It looks like the, yeah, is this the one with the helicopter?
Okay, yep.
Yes.
Yeah, because you can see the very distinct strobe from the helicopter there.
Yeah. And it just turns out to be part of a series of several cases reported throughout San Diego of this. You can see it's like an orangey reddish light that looks like a globe. And that's a gentleman just moving some stuff from his car to his house. And it's funny how the reports roll in, too, because, you know, people wait like a few weeks, yeah, a month, and they kind of just start trickling in, you know, within weeks of each other. So, if you know, like a month or so later, he reports this.
Yeah.
And then the next one is, if you can see those two images, are pretty much the same thing, it looks like. And it's hard to say with a still photo. Look at that. What is that?
And yeah, and there are a couple of spots in there where you can see a flash of the object, but it's not like the steady strobe of an FAA flash.
It's not. And it's being followed by a helicopter and it's not showing up on radar. And also, if you want to see a full breakdown of that video, Mike Rizzo, who is the assistant state director for Southern California, and he has a podcast called Universal Disclosure Podcast on YouTube as well. He's going to do a full analysis of that video and give you all the details. But he was nice and told me I was welcome to share the video as it was here, because I just always think of these cases and how they're just similar, and that's why it's so important to have these field investigators just talking back and forth. So then the next report that comes in is the guy who's takes his dog out and sees the photos of basically the orange light over the dumpster, and that is 137734. I mean, sorry, 138734. 138734.
Okay.
And there's one and two, if you remember those images.
That is correct.
There we go. Sorry, it's my first time doing a case of interest,
right.
So everyone forgive me. I'll be more organized next time.
You're doing great.
Thank you. Thank you.
There you go.
You have, like,
here's
the
initial
audience.
Image right there.
Yeah. So that's one of the two images he takes. He's trying different settings on his phone. But you can see it's an orange. I mean, it's, you know, like... You know, it's hard to say, oh, this is what that other guy saw in the video, but they're all within weeks of each other, and it is an orangish light, and it is not on the radar. It's not, you know, I guess it could be a drone. I don't, you know, but then it does. So this guy watches it for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then he thinks, oh my gosh, I better go get my phone. So he runs inside, gets his phone, comes out, and it's still there. And that's when he's able to get those photographs. But he didn't want to take his eyes off it, you know, like, because you're like, the minute I look away, it'll be gone, right?
And that's
so
a,
then he realized.
That's a long experience. 20
it's
minutes.
It's a long experience. He runs inside, he gets it, he snaps the two photos, and then he says, after he snapped the two photos, the light kept moving east and then zipped. Gone, just straight up, gone, out of sight. And he said he'd been watching the craft for 25 minutes total from beginning to end. He checked all the apps to see if anyone in the neighborhood or anyone nearby, and this is in San Diego, out near Santee, El Cajon, where I'm from, says he did a little research online, and he found some other people sharing a YouTube video that was taken, and, you know, and it's, like, inconclusive, and I asked the people, I emailed the YouTube channel, they didn't respond, so I can't really...
Yeah.
Investigate it, but the light looks very similar, and it's in the same city, and it's an orange light, and it's just sort of hovering over the valley. So I don't know. And I called Gillespie Field, which is like the local, the tiny airport, like nothing, nobody had anything. So I don't know what those are, but there's, lately it really seems to be these like orange lights, which make me think of, like, you know, the chariots of the gods, the, you know, the shields, you know, coming in, and they call them the shields because they glowed like fire, like a shield, like it seems like, I don't know what they are, but I mean, to me, that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I this last year when I went to Roswell with my brother for Roswell UFO Festival, we were sitting there and saw a light take off like that, where, and granted, 4th of July weekend, we saw a couple of lights. Nothing was really going on with the fireworks or anything like that. But the one that we saw was really strange because, yeah, it didn't pop up. And granted, I will be the first one to say not all flights pop up on flight radar. A lot of international flights do not pop up on flight radar. Only flights that are required to carry the specific FAA beacon that is detected
on that. And you can see them turn it off. You can watch a plane go and then it's gone. And then you'll see it come back on in another place.
And like a lot of military flights aren't on there. Things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a good record, but it's also an imperfect record. You know, so yes, it could be another military flight. It could be something like that. We were near a military base, but it was specifically this light came in and stopped and then just like rose at a very strange rate and just kept going until it just disappeared. And it was pretty wild to see. It was very interesting to see.
What is that?
But there's a reason why I don't say UFO with that, because it wasn't an object as far as I know. Right. It was a light, but I don't know if it was an object. Yeah. You know, like the amorphous thing that I saw flying through the sky. Like, that was a thing. It was.
Well, that's why there's people use UAP. Like, there are, to me, there's an actual use for the word UAP, and it shouldn't be for all lights in the sky. Like, it doesn't just replace UFO. Like, I saw an object. Like, I don't want my object called a phenomenon, but a lot of people see phenomenon. So it gives us a new word to describe things.
I love it because, well, I got this scientific desk reference at the MUFON conference in Ohio. But this is an actual scientific desk reference, last printed in 1975, my birth year. And it has all kinds of phenomena on the sky, on the ground. I have another one for geologic phenomena, all kinds
of stuff.
But yeah, it's got like articles on ball lightning going back to the 1600s, you know, things like that, so that you can see what these circumstances and these stories are of phenomena, because, well, phenomena is something that science has to exclude from their data. You know, so for me, phenomena is a hugely important word. And when you say it's a phenomena in the sky, that literally drags science in kicking and screaming. They now have to take part. Like, it's incumbent upon them once you use the word phenomena.
Right.
You know? So.
Yeah. I mean, and also, like, I was thinking about that, not to get too off topic, but, you know, the age of disclosure, like, are UFOs going to no longer be included in phenomena? You know, like, are they going to be now? It's just, yeah, we got UFOs, we got aliens, we got dogs, cats, like, are they just going to be, you know, like, for me, they're a part of our regular world, because I think about them, I've seen them, I know they're there, but like, are they going to be taken out of that realm and put into like, just like, you know,
the cheese
realm, just our, like, regular 3D world?
It's like Earl and I used to say on the show all the time, CJ, I don't say I believe in UFOs because belief implies faith. I know UFOs exist. Like, I know they do. What they are, I don't know, but I know they exist.
They're real. It's part of our reality. They're not like in a dream or a fantasy. Yeah. They're here in our 3D reality. They affect things in our 3D reality.
That's right.
I don't know what they are. And I'll tell you right now, spoiler alert, they're not going to tell you what it is either in Age of Disclosure. No. You're not going to hear anything like that.
That's like, you know, once again, that's like thinking that you're going to see the Houdini moment of somebody wheeling out a gurney on the floor of Congress and pulling a sheet off of the wreckage and a body. Like, look, here's the hand. You know, like, it's not going to happen. That's not what disclosure is. Disclosure is going to happen through legal means, that kind of stuff. So, which we can have a total conversation on at some point.
Yes. I mean, look, I love talking about this stuff. I love thinking about it. I know all of my thoughts are not the most popular, but I just love entertaining all these thoughts and ideas. Like, that's what now is for.
Exactly.
When all the information comes out, we won't be able to have all these theories. We'll just know what's going on. But, like, for now, our caveman brain gets to wonder. And that's just one of the things our caveman brain loves to do is wonder what's next, what's around the corner, what's beyond the shore, what's just above us in the sky, what's below us in the ocean, what is it?
Yep, exactly.
All
and, you know, we did have that one extra video that I accidentally played. Let's get into that for a second.
Oh, that's okay. Let me talk about that. I know
Please.
We got to get on. So this is just, I love this case. And this guy said he was on the local news and everything. So your viewers may, if you're in the Indio area, might have even seen it on the local news. But he sent it because he said, I still don't know what it is. No one, they put it on the news, but no one's told me what it is. And I said, I don't think I can tell you either. But man lives out in Indio. He has a job. He also, in Indio, is the kind of place where you drive your trash to the dump. And he had heard there was a dump near his office. So he thought, I'm going to go check out this dump after work and see if this is a good place that I could just take the trash here on my way to work in the morning. So it's like 9-something at night, 9:14 at night, he says. And he goes out. He checks out the dump. Dump looks good. He's driving home from the dump off this dark road in the middle of Indio, spills a beverage in his lap, just like the guy taking his dog out for a walk.
Yeah.
People are always just doing something and they appear. Spills a beverage, pulls over to the side of the road. He's wiping his pants, getting it off, and he notices this light coming in, and he assumes it's a helicopter coming, doesn't pay too much attention to it. It's getting closer and closer. He opens his sunroof to hear the helicopter, but there are no sounds coming through his sunroof. He's listening. He pulls out his phone. He starts filming. Even in the video, when you play it, I don't know if you can hear it. You can hear his dog snoring at the volume. He has a tiny dog that's snoring on the front seat. What are those lights coming out of that other light? But there are no sounds coming through his sunroof. He's listening. He pulls out his phone. He starts filming. Even in the video, when you play it. Sorry, I just started hearing myself back to myself. Okay, that's okay. No, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't speaking over myself. So he says, sure, could be, you know, because everybody goes to flares, could be flares. He said, sure, I don't see any smoke. You can't see. Usually if you see flares, you're going to see the smoke in the light as they're falling. There's really no smoke around it or anything. And I showed it to military people with flares, and they said similar, but not quite. So again, it's just sort of in the unknown. We don't know. Like, I don't, you know, like, what, and why are the lights the same size as the original lights sometimes when they break off and they're like almost liquid? I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's an unknown, obviously, because I can't tell you. And then why is one breaking? And maybe it is flares, but why can't, it's nighttime in the desert. You sound travels so at night in the desert. You know what I mean? Like, he should be hearing, there's no sound other than his tiny little dog snoring.
No, I would definitely go drones.
It could be a drone, but then why is the drone dropping things? What is it? What is the drone dropping and why?
The drone is dropping drones. So
but they just go straight down to the ground.
If you watch,
they
could be returning home, something like that. If you watch, it looks like, because that definitely looks like an FAA light as far as the colors flashing. And then, one coming off that's the same size that has another flashing object come off of it.
Maybe it is a drone. Yeah, it could be. Most people said they felt it was flares, not drones. Because then they're just
Thing is, though, but the one FAA light, the first one that comes off, and I'll stop saying FAA light because I don't want to, people's minds.
I see, like, a reddish light in there, but I can't tell.
But if you watch.
Oh, there, right there, right there, right
now
there.
Now watch. You'll see it come back up in a second after the second light comes down.
Hey, solved. I'll tell them it's drones. Maybe, I didn't,
watch.
You know, it's
here,
hard.
Here it comes coming back up. Whoop.
Yeah, right there.
So that's where I go for drone rehearsal.
That's true. I would go out there for drone rehearsal as well. Well, that was on the news. You just saw the case that was on the news and a bunch of places, and no one seemed to know what it was because everyone's mind, I think, went to flares. And I was like, it doesn't, I mean, and maybe it's flares, but I think everyone is assuming like a guy jumping out of an airplane with flares.
Yes. Or, you know, even flare balloons, that kind of stuff. There's
maybe they're not flares. Maybe it's just regular old lights. Maybe it's just regular lights. I don't know.
Could be.
And that's the thing when you're filming a little light in the distance with your phone.
Well, and once again, the important thing to remember is that sense of wonder and awe that happens in the moment, CJ. Yeah. That's what you have to hold on to. Because, as much as I hate to break any heart out there, you've got a 3-5% chance that you caught something strange. And a 97-95% chance that you caught something explainable. All right.
Well, and that's, I believe, how I marked the cases, that I thought it was man-made, but I don't know what exactly it is.
Exactly. But the idea here is that even though this person may have just had their case explained, it does not remove that moment where they took the video and they went, my God, what is that?
Their
reality was open.
Yeah. And it may, and who knows? Like, we don't, I mean, that's I'm right. not there. I don't, yeah, we and, don't know. We can just say what we think it looks like.
Yeah.
But you're right. And seeing it on the screen when it comes back up, I've been watching it come back up, but I didn't really see the two lights until you just pointed it out. So,
yeah, it's real hard to see the flash between the two of them, but you can see the alternation between them.
I'm like, what is it doing out there? I guess they're just practicing.
Yeah. Yeah, and much like
out by the dump in India,
much like a flight line where you're looking at a plane for a very long time, and it just looks like an orange orb for a good 20 minutes until a slight deviation in direction changes, and you see one of the FAA signals or something like that. This is very same thing: is that they're basically on plane with each other. And then they start losing formation to dip out of formation.
I think you're 100% right. I think it's drones with some kind of a flare or light attached. Yeah. I'm not sure what they're doing, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's literally just their headlight.
Exactly.
And you know, once again, that proper angle, same thing as any small aircraft, something like that. It can look big. It can look very big. That's just my initial assessment looking at it.
No, I think your explanation to me makes the most sense, because I showed it to a lot of people and I got a lot of different explanations, and I'm pretty sure it's something, but I just don't know exactly what. But the drone with flares makes the most sense, but I hadn't really thought of a drone with flares. I was thinking of people.
Well,
with flares.
Even a drone releasing smaller drones, once again, like
smaller
a drone
drones.
Show. That kind
of
stuff.
What do I know? I don't know and I did watch a million drone footages. I watched a million people diving out of airplanes with flares.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's just it, is that number one, we can't all know all of it. I don't know all of it.
No.
And there's a lot out there. There are a lot of tools out there, a lot of things that, you know, like you
there's
were saying,
UFO Stellarium, kits drones. You can buy a UFO kit. Like, I've seen a bunch. And also, I love when you guys film your drones, because you give us things to look at.
Yeah.
You know, to compare things to. And that's where I go a lot when I go, I think this is a drone, but I'm trying to find a drone footage that looks similar to this drone.
And
when you guys film it and put it up, it helps us.
There are drones. I had a buddy when the whole drone flap happened this last year. I had a buddy that was like, oh, there's no way. These things are up there for hours. I'm like, I don't know if you've ever seen like a pipeline surveying drone that has an 8-12 hour battery life and a 40 pound pulling capacity where it can lift 40 pounds for that amount of time, that kind of stuff. They're carrying high def 12G cameras, stuff like that.
That's what I would love. If you know a drone expert, I'd love to get a drone expert to speak to SoCal MUFON as well. It's hard to find experts in certain areas, you know, but
yeah. Yeah. Because there's so much technology out there. There's tons of it that is being leveraged.
Yeah, everyone's just a volunteer. That's why we always have like speakers at all our meetings and stuff, because we're constantly learning. Like, you can't know everything.
Yeah, no, exactly. And even now, like, I've told quite a few people, because things have picked up here a little bit, in our area, social media wise, as far as things and sightings and people posting stuff. And it's like, please don't forget, the Amazon drone deliveries just started here in Texas. So there's a whole lot more drones out there in the sky than you thought. A whole lot more.
Everything's a drone or AI.
Because if they've started, that means they've been testing for quite a while.
Right.
So.
True. It's true. I can't tell you how many times I see something and I go, of course, that's it. But like, that's how you learn. It's how you learn.
I live here near the flight line for Austin Bergstrom. And there, last Halloween, we were out walking and my buddy was in town with us. We were out doing the loop for Halloween trick or treating. And for 20 or 30 minutes, CJ, I was like, that is not Jupiter. It's not. It's not the time of year for Jupiter in the sky right now. It's not. It's not this. It's not that. And it took 30 minutes and we were walking like on a loop. So even as we turned, even as we curved, this thing looked just like a hovering orange orb. Nothing more. Until about minute 35 when we stopped in an esplanade and we're talking with a family and I saw blink, 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 blink. And it was like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, I knew the flight lines here. But it never moved. It took that long for the perspective of the plane to change and for me to rotate on the earth, for that perspective to change and for those lights to be able to be seen beyond the brightness and luminosity of the landing light.
And something coming at you from far away will look like it's shooting straight up too.
Exactly. So it was wild and it was truly a moment where like I had to check myself after, you know, and be like, all right, I need to be more skeptical of my mind whenever I'm looking at things out in the wild, because I got pretty carried away there for a little while where it was like, no, man, that is something strange right there. You know?
Well, and it was. I mean, your angle of it and everything actually was. It really was. Like, there's like one woman sent me a great thing and I was like, well, you have an angle I've never seen of, you know, the Falcon, you know, the train. What is it? The satellite train. Like it was coming straight at her, so it looked like dots were appearing, shooting slowly straight up into the sky. So, you know, and she didn't really care.
Yeah.
She wasn't happy that she had I never saw footage of it doing that before. It was coming straight at her.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in the last few minutes here, CJ, how do you begin to, I guess, explain these things to an experiencer, to somebody who's given a report. And how do you further encourage somebody to keep looking up in that kind of way?
Yeah, I mean, well, I love giving people the apps that we use, a lot of the apps we use, you know, and I go through more, like I'll go through flight radar and another and another and another, you know, looking for different flights and stuff. But like, I love giving people apps. Like, everybody out there should have these and be able to look and identify and know there are unidentified in the sky. And that's just the truth. And I just feel like everyone needs to report what they see, because you don't know, like, obviously, there's a lot of star-like objects that turn out to be stars, but let us decide. If you can't figure it out, just make the report and we'll figure it out. And then, I don't know, I don't always tell everybody. If someone says they want to know the results, I'll tell them, but some people don't seem to want to know. They want to make the report, and that's okay with me too. Like, you kind of feel each witness out. You can tell somebody is just like, I'm happy I spoke to you, case closed. And you go, okay, great. That's great. And some people want, and I think in the new app, people are going to be able to choose. Do you want us to tell you what the verdict was, or do you just want to make the report?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people just want to make the report. Yeah, yeah. And some people just want to talk to somebody. So it's really up to the person. And some people want to know and they don't like the verdict, but you just try to be kind. And you say, I don't know everything. You could be right. I could be wrong.
Right.
I'm just saying this is what I think it is. I don't know. I don't know what they are. I'm not like, this is the thing. If someone says they're an expert on UFOs, you can call bullshit because nobody's an expert on UFOs. Like, nobody's
right.
a real expert on UFOs. Nobody knows what they are. Even in this government documentary with everybody in it, nobody says who they are, what they want, why they're here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no.
So that's all I can say is report. Because also, you're confirming someone else's report, right?
That's right.
Even like that guy in the military. You might have had something happen in the military long ago, and you're like, why should I bother? Well, the guy with you might have already reported it and is hoping to God you're going to also report it because he's looking for confirmation of what he saw. And the same with other people. I can't tell you how many people report something and say, oh, this has been eating away at me for 5 years, 10 years, whatever, 1 year, 6 months. I just got to know, did anyone else in the area see this thing last, you know, December? But, you know, and it's weird because I always say, why wait so long? You know, like, why wait 6 months? Why wait a year? You know, and so it's eating away at them, it's eating away. Yeah. And they just want to see, did anyone else report it?
Yeah. Yeah. And also to just get that off your chest that you had the experience. And,
yeah.
And once again, I am somebody, until proven otherwise, I will always believe an experiencer because I've had my own experiences. I've had my own moments in the world, paranormal, what have you, that have shaken me to the core and that have changed the paradigm with which I view the world, you know? And once again, even if those are explained someday, it doesn't remove that beautiful moment. It doesn't change that moment. So remember that, experiencers. If you send your pictures to CJ, to Curious Research, to anybody, your videos, your audio, just because something is explained does not remove your experience. It doesn't change your experience. It doesn't change the fact that you were changed forever by that moment. That the way you viewed reality was changed. And your reality became wider and bigger. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, before we let you go, CJ, let's let everybody know where they can go to make a report if they're in the Southern California area, where they can go to make a report if they're anywhere else in the country or the world with MUFON.
Yeah, you can go. Our SoCal MUFON or SoCalMUFON.com website has links back to the main page as well, right? So when you hit report, it's going to take you, report a UFO is going to take you back to MUFON.com, which is also the international site. Everyone can report there. You can report a UFO, report an abduction or an entity. It's going to take you through, like, ask yourself some of these questions, see if this is something that's going to show you what the Starlink looks like, show you some stuff like that, and then go ahead and make your report. And like I said, we have a new system that will be coming out in a little bit. So, like, get to know what the Falcon 9 rocket launches look like. And also, you can sign up with Vandenberg and get... love getting the text. I love when they do one after the sun goes down. I'm always hoping it'll be when the sun goes down because it's so pretty. But make your reports because you're going to help other people. You're going to, you know, what you saw may not seem like that much, but somebody nearby might have be reporting an abduction that's happening. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
you
right.
might be just confirming somebody else's report.
Absolutely.
So, and you don't know. And it may be mundane. It may be terrestrial. That's okay. It just, we all learn from it. Our investigators learn by doing it. Like, you know, you're going to learn by reporting it. And that's the only way we're going to all learn is if you report it, you learn a new thing, you go, okay, now I know what that looks like. And you're going to keep looking to the sky and making another submission when you see something else. And you'll have a different set of criteria to judge whether if it is anomalous or not.
Exactly. Exactly. CJ,
right.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. I can't wait to have you on again and again. It
thank
was
you
super
for
fun.
Solving my case for me.
Oh, anytime. Truly. It was absolutely fun. I can't wait to have you on again. It's always great seeing
so
you on social
you.
Media.
Yeah.
We will be sending links, all that kind of good stuff. Once this goes live to the platform. So we'll chat at you soon. Have a great evening.
Okay, great. Goodbye to you and your wonderful audience. They're
absolutely.
So sweet.
Have a great time.
Adios, amigos.
Nos vemos. Well, you are online, everybody. That was, when it comes to experience, as we've said on this show all the time, it's the fact of we all have a different filter through which we see reality, through which we experience reality. My brother, who is getting here tomorrow, even though we shared Thanksgivings, Christmases, things like that, has a different filter through which he sees those Christmases and Thanksgiving, because we're individuals. So even if you are in the same room or same locale with somebody when one of these instances happens, it doesn't mean that your experience is the same. It doesn't mean that you experienced that moment in the same kind of way. So find yourself, find your moment, find that time that you had that experience. And yeah, go report that. If you can't go report that, at the very least, write it down. So that what you have is as undeprecated as possible, because the further you go down the line, the further you get away from facts and you start seeing things through that filter of reality. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be talking with our good friend Scott Ertz from Plug Hits Live and F5 Live Refreshing Technology about the filter of fear of AI. Is it reasonable? Is it necessary? Is AI good? Can it help us? What can it do for humanity? We will be getting into that and so much more with Scott Ertz right after this, everybody.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you so much for hanging on through that quick commercial break. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially TrueHymn Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by TrueHymnScience.com. I have been using their product for many years, and it is absolutely amazing. Christopher Lynch and TrueHymn Science use a spigeric process where every part of the plant is used, combusted, and reused. Every part, the seeds, the stems, the roots, the buds, the leaves, it's all used, combusted, and reused to create an amazing spigeric product complete with terpene profiles and amazing CBD levels. Stop on by, check them out. TrueHymnScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and get two, count them, two edibles on your way out the door. Our guest in this segment tonight is our good friend Scott Ertz. He is the host of Plug Hits Live, the tour de force behind Plug Hits Live, and truly an AI guru. He is one of the people that I go to when I have tech problems, things like that I can't figure out. So I want to thank you for all the help that you've given me in the past, Scott, and for always coming on the show and talking about topics like we are tonight.
Well, right back at you, because you're the one I go to where there's things that I can't solve, particularly when it comes to audio.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And in the end, we ended up not being able to publish that episode from CES this year at all. I had three. Wow. Three audio experts, including yourself, try and clean it up, and everybody went, yeah, you're not getting this from back.
Yeah, it was a tough one. It was a tough one. And, you know, things happen. Tech happens is the only way you can say it.
That one was wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have been on the cusp of AI for a long time, hanging around CES. We've been seeing it come out and not just trickles, but full-on open faucets over the last few years.
Yeah.
With the amount.
Last two in particular, 25 and 24. You might remember past CESs, we've talked about blockchain. There was the blockchain router that I don't know if it ever actually happened.
It didn't. And it didn't, sadly.
Yeah, I didn't think so. For all the same reasons that 3D TV and the metaverse and
4-color TV,
all these things, like, they become a big hype and then into the ether they go.
Yeah.
People get super excited about it and then, my prediction is that we're in that next bubble right now. That AI is that marketing term that will vanish into the ether at some point in the next couple of years. The technology won't, just like blockchain technology didn't really go away.
Yeah.
It's not at all what was promised, but it didn't disappear. You know, it's not gone from the world. There's stuff that's built on blockchain in really interesting ways. And I think we'll see stuff in the AI world that will get built on there, but I think that term you'll stop hearing. For a couple of reasons.
Go ahead.
Not the least of which is that a study that I just saw today, accidentally, not in preparation for this, 68% of consumers lose trust in a brand when they can tell that they're using AI. So,
interesting.
Great example that literally happened over the last couple of weeks. Well, last year versus now. Coca-Cola, one of the largest brands on the planet, right? I think their logo is the second most recognizable in the world, second only to Apple. And ironically, that's the other company. Coca-Cola last year changed their total holiday marketing, and their thing was spent on AI, and it was a weird Santa Claus, and the trucks weren't the same size, and it was embarrassing from the company that brought us the, you know, sledding Coca-Cola bears. And right there, Christmas is so synonymous with Coca-Cola for so long.
Well, I mean, they literally invented Santa Claus, dude.
Right. Right. The Santa Claus that we know today is from Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are Christmas, and yet they threw all of that away last year. And then on the other side, and that was for an actual ad.
Yeah.
Right. And then on the other side, you have Apple, who went the extreme other direction with something that didn't matter at all. Their new Apple TV intro, which if you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It is super simple. We know, right? The Netflix, and then it zooms in with the wavy things. And Apple's is this prismatic spin on the Apple TV logo, and it lands on the white Apple TV logo, and there's a prismatic rainbow at the bottom.
Mm.
Right? Super cool. You look at it and go, oh, I wonder how long that took to animate. Wrong. Entirely practical effects.
Yeah.
Spinning lights, acrylic logo. They've got a whole mini documentary.
Yeah.
I wouldn't quite.
It's kind of like the famous Windows background.
Yes.
You know, like, that's one of my favorite stories. We're like, no, that's an actual window with a smoke machine and a laser.
Yes.
And it's like, it's an actual physical logo.
Now, the thing that's interesting is when Microsoft did that, a bunch of designers and artists and whatnot went, why did you spend all that time to take a photo when you could have done it in Photoshop in 20 minutes? On the other hand, when Apple went fully practical for their Apple TV intro, designers and artists are praising them for going practical. Now, that's a little bit the sycophanty over Apple, but I have praised both of them.
Mm.
I love that the Windows 10 wallpaper was practical. I love that the Apple TV intro is practical.
Yeah.
But the thing that's interesting is the response to the two.
Mm.
And it goes along with that study. It's a huge number.
People 68% is massive.
Instantly lose trust in a brand if they see that AI is involved in what they're up to. I mean, that's a huge number. Now, there are ways to incorporate it that don't scream, look, I used AI.
Sure.
Right? And then there are ways to just own it. Right? Ray William Johnson is a great example of somebody who's using AI, fully owns it, talks about that Leonardo is his content partner, but they always start with real art, which I know you know about yourself, right?
Yeah.
Starting with human-made art and then allowing, in his case, Leonardo, and I think in your case, Midjourney, to augment human art.
Yeah.
That, like, he doesn't seem to have the backlash to using Leonardo when they're doing that.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I remember that I've been editing video long enough that Photoshop and Premiere were not the same thing, and Premiere was not owned by Adobe, and you had to buy Boris effects. It didn't come with it. All those things. Like, I was still deck-to-deck editing things at the time.
Me too.
And people were literally concerned at the moment that graphic artistry as we knew it, that art of hand-making a font, hand-drawing things for ads, stuff like that, was going to go away because of Photoshop.
Yeah.
That it was that the world of the graphic artist was going to change forever. And the workflow changed. The need for a graphic artist was still there.
Indeed. And the hand-drawn stuff has not gone away.
No.
We haven't premiered it yet, but here's a world premiere announcement. The TPN CES 2026 logo, because, you know, we do a little bit with it every year. This is an old one, right? Last year, CES's branding went all hollow. So it was all outline text. So we did too. This year, they have used AI, which I think is really funny, and we are not. Our logo is taking on the branding effects of the CES branding for the year with these, like, almost home movies style, like circles, and we're doing the logo this year by hand in that style. We have an artist that's working on it probably as we speak.
And all
it did was it went from a pen or pencil or something on paper to
a Waymo tablet.
It's so sad. I have one right in front of me, and I can't reach it. To a stylus on a screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wacom has done such a great job of creating styluses that have texture and form, and you can feel like you're writing on a correct surface.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like plastic on glass and things like that. That's what Vicky's working on right now for us. But it's still hand-drawn. It's to a digital surface in either Inkscape or Illustrator.
Sure.
But it's still hand-drawn.
That's right.
And it's going to look awesome.
Yeah. And I use a Remarkable tablet. And I love that thing. I love that thing. You know, and you can do all kinds of digital work with it. And it's fantastic. And all it is a different style of workflow. But you do have the issues with AI creation going on. I mean, the whole AI, I've got an AI voice for me. Our mutual friend Todd Cochran was the one who advised me to go with 11 Labs. But mm-hmm. I've got a program in my voice where, yeah, I could feed it any script and you would have to really, 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 really know me.
Yeah.
To know that that is not me reading that script.
Yeah. Like when Todd was using it, I always knew when it wasn't him.
Yeah.
And yeah. I imagine I would know that it's not you.
My brother spotted it. He was like, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was interesting.
You and I have known each other for years.
Exactly.
Face to face, person to person.
Yeah.
And that's not the same thing even as your listeners, right? Yeah. Your listeners may not be able to identify it because they've not been in a room with you. They may not be able to pick out, like, knowing what your face is doing while you're talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Which you and I have, you and your brother obviously have, with
Yep.
We both have with Todd.
Exactly.
But yeah, there's lots of times. We had somebody on the show during CES pre-COVID. It must have been 18 or 19. Don Bain was doing the interview and they said they could clone his voice. Well, they said they could clone a voice. And I said, I came on, I was TDing at the time. I came on and I said, so you're telling me that I can have a digital Don Bain? And Don goes, why would you want that? And I said, listen to your voice. And the guy from the company went, exactly.
Yeah.
Great voice.
Yeah.
But we had done some cloning with them and it wasn't what it is today. And ironically, that company, who I have an account with, has done a whole second generation. Mm. Your subscription to the first one does not give you a subscription to the second one. It's that big and different.
And here's
and I've done
clip.
Cloning with that, and it's really impressive. Again, I can usually tell, but it's what I do. It's also what you do. You probably can tell even if it's not a friend. You're like, that tone went weird.
I can hear edits in audio, all kinds of things. So but here's a sample of me.
I'm the mean person in the room that goes, that was recorded separately.
Yeah, exactly.
when Gordon Ramsay goes from talking in Hell's Kitchen to the studio and then back, I'm like, that wasn't recorded in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you where he hid that dove. So here's a clip of me, actually. This is the AI me reading. It's somewhere. Hold on.
We believe you.
Everything you are might not be what it seems, that the solidity of the ground beneath your feet, the vastness of the sky above, and even the passage of time might be an illusion. Imagine for a moment, just a moment, that you're living inside a hologram. Not a hologram like the kind you see on a credit card or in a sci-fi movie, but one infinitely more complex. So, that's the AI me reading a script on, you know, the holographic universe concept. But it was very interesting to me when I was... Go ahead.
There's two things that jump out at me.
Yep.
First, there's not as much headroom. It sounds like it went through a serious compressor.
Uh-huh.
And the pacing is so not you.
Yeah. And the thing is that I tried to just read the script to train the voice. And I was like, this is going to friggin' take forever for me to read 20 minutes of audio to give this thing to train. Yeah. So I actively went through an episode that I had just pre-recorded and cut out the guest and just gave it like 1 minute of me talking, 30 seconds. And that's what it trained it off of. So it got, I think, a lot more inflection out of me because I was excited at moments. I was contemplative at moments. It got a lot more emotion behind it than I would have if I was just coldly reading a script.
For sure. There's a lot of range to it.
Well,
not in tone.
No.
There's a lot of range in you.
Yeah.
There's not as much range and tone, which is funny.
Well, yeah, yeah. And that brings
but us. But it's really good.
Hey, for $5 a month, you can't beat that. Honestly, for the cost to benefit ratio, you cannot beat $5 a month. And that's 11 labs, folks, just so you know. But it's one of those, it brings up the point of training AI. And the idea, the fact that most people don't understand, like I've built an offline AI here with a couple of data mining cards, things like that, like, you know, older NVIDIA cards, but that are able to run LLMs. And there's probably about 16 gigs of video RAM running on that thing. It's pretty cool, but it is dedicated offline LLM. I do not want it to touch online for anything other than a Windows update because I'm specifically training it on data. So I don't want it to be dialing to the internet and finding random data and finding bad data.
Yes.
And that's just it. Like, sure, I'm training one of the LLMs as basically a scientist that does like frequency calculation and, you know, frequency hypothesis, but in order to be able to do that,
sure,
I've got to train it on the electromagnetic spectrum like it's a 4-year-old, you know, in order for me to later ask it like what frequencies might be able to levitate concrete, you know, or something like that. It has to understand the actual physics behind sound first and grasp all these things.
Are we not building the South Florida concrete castle?
Yeah, right. Exactly. But being able to, my plan is to be able to feed this thing with data that's given from paranormal investigations, things like that. So training it on very specific data sets where I don't want it to pull from the trash of the internet.
Yeah.
And that's just it is, and that's because, why it hallucinates because you
don't,
and everything
you don't
else.
Want Gemini to recommend putting glue in your macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the, I can't say what it said. But I think we all know somebody asked Gemini a fairly simple question and it, recommended self. It's an, and one user on Reddit recommends self harm. Holy cow. That changed tones real quick.
Well, and that's just it. There are a couple examples that I give, and the first is always Tay.
Oh, yeah.
Always Tay. Always.
I've used her as my example for years.
Well,
I think we've talked about her on this show before.
At least two
or out at of least your, the previous show.
Out of two of your appearances, we've talked about Tay. Absolutely. It's
That's
always
hilarious.
My first go-to because it truly shows the example of how the data pool affects the intelligence.
Absolutely.
And Tay, just for all of you folks who don't know, it's the Microsoft AI that was released onto Twitter. Into the wild. It had the intelligence of like a kindergartner, something like that when it went on. By the time it was done, it had the intelligence of like a 16-year-old, but because it was only fed Twitter, was like a raving racist.
Yeah.
And had to be taken offline within 48 hours.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Microsoft was like, yo, pull the plug on this because this is just out of pocket. We cannot control this thing.
It was wild. I spent some time with her.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Yeah. No, it was absolutely absolute insanity. But that's also because it was only pulling from the screaming of the void that is Twitter.
Which also is important. It proved that data set is important, but it also proved that Twitter hasn't actually changed. It's always been a pile of garbage.
That's right. Always been a hot dumpster fire.
Yeah. Elon Musk did not change the tone of Twitter.
Nope. Nope. Not one bit.
It's always been nonsense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, my birthday is the day before Skynet becomes sentient in Terminator. So it's always been a big point for me that, like, hey, you know, if you're concerned about Skynet or something like that, here's the thing. The internet is probably as smart as the average person reading the internet, these AIs, because it's using the internet as its source material.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have the capability of discernment that we have. It just sees a greater number of this topic in this vein. So it mm-hmm. assumes the fact that's correct.
Right.
You know?
So Gemini is the example that I continue to use today. And the reason is because leading up to Gemini, Google had their ranking system. They had completely kind of undercut the way PageRank worked and instead replaced it with a system that was about authenticity and trust and I can't remember, it was RATS or something. The acronym was really stupid. And then when Gemini comes along, it doesn't use any of that.
Yeah.
Google had this great system of ranking the validity. That's not a word. Validity.
It is now.
Coined. Trademark. The validity of information, whether or not it can and should be trusted.
Yeah.
And when they trained Gemini, they went, don't worry about any of that. Let's go to Reddit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's the articles from Cyber News about how it has a huge security problem, all kinds of things. And that's just...
Well, I mean, it's a Google product. Of course there's a security problem.
Yeah.
There's always that.
Well, and you know, that's the fact is, once again, the whole idea of being afraid of AI, even the idea of AI taking jobs, somebody's going to have to prompt the AI for it to do a job.
I listen to a lot of people out there, and I'm going to use two people who work for the same company because I think their takes are hilarious. Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh, they are on extreme opposite ends of this.
Yeah.
Ben Shapiro has proximity is the only word that's coming to mind. I don't know. I don't listen enough to remember the name of the sponsor. Has the one that has Comet as the browser. Perplexity. As a sponsor and admits that, you know, just like the steam engine and the Industrial Revolution, yes, the economy is going to change, but it's not going to full on steal jobs. Then on the other side, you've got Matt Walsh, who's probably sleeping with a handgun under his bed in case something other than the alarm clock makes noise in the middle of the night. They've got very different takes on technology. Generally, I fall probably closer to Matt than to Ben because I work in technology and therefore I know not to trust it. But one of the spaces that even Ben says is going to be totally upended by AI is software engineering. And the thing I keep reminding people is the only way that works is if the client knows what they want, which they do not.
Yeah. Most of the
the client would have to be able, you and I were just talking about a project that you're currently on and shifting expectations. You don't get that option with AI. You don't get shifting expectations. You get a thing and then you either it works or it doesn't and you have to start from zero.
Yeah.
You don't get the idea of shifting expectations. Oh, can we move this button to the other side? No, you can't. You had to already know that that's what you wanted when you started this.
Yeah.
There's no way that the software engineering world is what is overtaken by AI. Yes.
Yeah.
AI can do some coding. It's garbage, by the way, so everybody knows. What comes out is spectacular garbage. Our friend Marlo has been using it. And the first thing he asked me when I decided to go independent was, are you able to clean up the nonsense? Could it get there someday? Maybe.
Maybe.
But the way AI works is everything's new. Yep. So it's not on the horizon, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not looking at a full global restructuring of the way the world works. However, we are looking at some massive legal challenges.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. And I called it on Dudes and Beer years and years ago when the first voice AI came out from Adobe, mm-hmm. where if you use 20 minutes of somebody's voice, I was like, this is going to change the movie industry, hands down. Cause now if you have 20 minutes of a dead person's ADR, they're after filming, recording for voiceover dubs, things like that. Like, you got tons of that sitting around.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, like Robert De Niro dies tomorrow, he could still be voicing over movies and being a narrator and stuff. And that's literally what led to part of the Hollywood writers' strike.
Yep.
Not but a few years ago. And then
the video game voice actor strike.
Yep. The video game voice actor strike. And it's what led to James Earl Jones selling the rights to his voice in perpetuity.
Yeah.
And being able to do it. Where it's like, yes, he can now be the voice of Darth Vader forever and his family will get money.
Yep.
Like they could make Darth Vader Christmas commercials till the end of time and still have the same voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah. And with The Raw, they have the ability to train new ones as the technology gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same token, right now you have fake videos of Michio Kaku saying that 3i Atlas is a UFO. You have fake videos of Avi Loeb doing the same thing.
You currently can't convince me that it's not. No.
You know, so it's one of those. And of course, my communities are just alight with, I mean, heck, over my shoulder is all of my AI art, you know, stuff like that. It's not hard to generate things now. And even right now, we're looking at the fact of, the top song on the country music charts is from an AI artist.
Yeah.
From an AI artist.
So it's interesting.
Which kind of tells you the current state of country music.
In and of itself. Completely imploded in on itself. Yeah. And yeah, it's garbage.
Yeah.
But so I'm not going to use names, but I'll give you information after the show. But
we'll dish.
So there's somebody who is, let's say, tangentially connected to our circle here in Tampa, who has recently created a new Facebook and LinkedIn profile with an elongated version of his name, and he claims to be an American songwriter. And so what did I do? I immediately had to research. Out I went. Let's go find out what we're talking about. I've known you for many years. There's no evidence of this. And so I ended up on Spotify on his profile. And I get to the bottom and I read the bottom because I'm like, there's no way this isn't AI slop. And so I get to the bottom and it, you know, about the artist, and it just spells out, yes, this is AI slop. So I go and I play the first track. I'll be damned if it's not the same voice as the one from the top of the top of the charts. He managed to use the same voice.
Wow.
Like, oh, I've heard this recently. That's really interesting. I hate all of this.
Yeah. And you know, when it comes to creation, in that kind of way, because I use AI in my music, I use it because I write a lot of my stuff on beat machines, stuff like that. What I have is a stereo track. So yeah, I use AI to go in. Emastered is a great program to be able to throw a track in, and it gives you constituent parts of, like, here's the kick drum, here's the bass line, stuff like that. Wicked cool. You know, that is once again an accoutrement and a tool. It's not something that I am using for hard creation.
Yes, it's different. There is an important difference between AI assistance and AI slop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, there is the camp that worries about a lot of this stuff. I mean, even when it comes to digital identity, stuff like that, that's something that I bring up on the show regularly, Scott, is that we don't really have a definition of digital identity in this country.
Yes. It's a huge mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know you may find the cookies annoying, folks, and opting into them, But the whole reason behind that is because the UK has declared the fact that the way you think on the internet, that unique way, is part of your digital fingerprint.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody wants to know how you browse the internet, you need to give them permission to get that. We don't have that here. We just mass swath data while you're cruising sites from the US. So,
yep.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of concern about digital ID, stuff like that, because of these things, especially with AI, you know. So for me,
it's so easy to clone somebody now.
Sure.
You know, we were talking about it earlier in a positive light, but there are negative ones as well. I'm just going to read this real quick.
Go ahead.
So-and-so fuses technologies developed by Suno, FL Studio, it's the only one I don't know, Ableton, NVIDIA, and others.
Fruity Loops Studio is FL Studio.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fruity Loops.
Because I get stuck on Florida.
Okay.
With FL?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the guys that helped get what is now Audition started. Okay,
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So with the world of AI, one of the things, so I teach a class on using AI for production. We've got a whole site with, you know, references and guides and stuff like that. But one of the things I always say is, if you spend a lot of time online, especially you and I, right? You and I have thousands of hours of our voices out there. It's really easy to clone us. And if it's a class on production, these people are likely in that space as well.
Sure.
But even if you're not, even if you're just a teenager who posts to Instagram or TikTok too much, it's really easy to clone somebody's voice and then call your parents, because harvesting data is really easy. And their phone number was probably leaked in a data breach at some point.
Yeah.
And they can call as you and say, hey, I'm in Cancun and I'm stuck. I need $1,000. Or they can say, I've been kidnapped, and it sounds like you.
Yeah.
To the point where it's happening way too frequently. I'm following stories on this a lot.
Yeah.
And so, am I worried about Skynet? No. Am I worried about scammers? Yes.
Absolutely. No.
And your family need to have a safe word.
I know a couple of elderly gentlemen, that have been taken advantage of recently, to the point of, you know, and answering messages from people on social media who, of course, are not who they claim to be. They're AI generated. The conversation's AI generated.
Yeah.
And it comes to the point of a picture swap. And then the next thing is, well, now that we have that, you know, if you don't share with us this amount of money, we're gonna, you know, share your information across the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those. I'm like, call their bluff. I mean, what are you, like 74, man? Call their bluff.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody's going through that at 74, and the chances are, just like they're an AI bot, they're an AI bot. And they ain't going through anything like that unless you actively give them information.
Right.
You know, and that's just it. We used to have that conversation with Arshon McCleskey, here in town, who was the head of the UT Center for Identity and former Secret Service officer in the fraud department, about how to protect elderly parents. You have an elderly parent, I have two, you know, and it's tough to
protect.
I mean, I didn't realize your father was still here.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you know my mother.
Yeah, yeah.
Personally. But yeah, no, that's still here.
Okay. Yeah. And it's one of those, man, I've been taken advantage of. Like, I have an avatar. Just so you guys know, whenever you see Facebook on the screen, that's my avatar that I'm signed into, so that you don't actively see my personal friends list or my personal stuff, you know, things like that.
You don't So you don't want to get in trouble like somebody else in our industry did.
Well, it's also the fact of I've gotten in trouble. I have the avatar because at like 4:30 in the morning, I woke up for a 6 a.m. shift and got an email one day. Was, oh, you know, Facebook violation, this and that. And I was like, okay, whatever, dude. And I clicked the button. By the time I made it to breakfast, I got a text message from a buddy of mine who lived here in Austin who was like, hey, you been posting on Facebook this morning? I was like, no, not yet, which is pretty rare, even though it's like 5:30 a.m. Why? What's up? It's like, your profile's kicking out some pretty hardcore pornography.
Ooh.
You should go check that out. So, yeah, yeah, I created
probably more like you should go investigate.
Yeah, yeah. So I shut down I locked my account down. I immediately like made a profile with a throwdown email that I have. And now like one is connected to my personal email. The other is connected to the throwdown email. And I get tons of things of Facebook violation for this video, Facebook violation for this, like click the button. It's like, if it comes to that email, I know exactly what it's about.
Yeah.
Because only genuine Facebook comes to the other one. And that's really only like your Meta verified has been paid. Like, that's all I ever get is like your Meta. And that made a huge difference, honestly, with the number of things that I got just verifying my Facebook account. But yeah, like that whole avatar of mine exists because it has direct control as an admin on all of my pages. So if somebody hacks my personal account again, I can go kick myself off as the admin and they can't jack with my business pages and things like that.
So I have the same thing. It's funny because I get friend requests from people to the other one all the time, which I find hilarious. But then like I think you've met Terry.
Oh, yeah.
She and I are admins on all of each other's pages.
Yeah.
In case something goes weird, we're admins back and forth. So if she loses access to her page or her account for whatever I do, we've always got backups. Because there was one of the kids from MasterChef Junior years ago, Logan something. He had a huge following on Facebook till his account was hacked. And now it posts Chinese nonsense videos all the time, and he can't get Meta to fix it.
And that's just it, you know. These AI bots are very sneaky, they're very crafty.
And all of that happened pre-modern AI. That was a human being brute forcing or phishing. Now it's so much easier. They're using AI to write the phishing emails. Interestingly, I don't know if people know this. One of the things that we all laugh about is how obvious the phishing emails are, because there's like misspellings and things like that. Those are all on purpose, and the AI generated ones maintain it. All of that stuff is in there because you and I aren't their target, because you and I are going to figure it out. And they're never going to get any money out of it. They're looking for our parents who won't notice the misspellings. Well, my mother will, because she's insane about misspellings in particular. But you'd think that she was an English teacher, but she wasn't. Those are all in there on purpose, and the AI generated ones maintain that because they don't want to waste their time with people like you and I who are going to spot it immediately. But it's getting more sophisticated because of AI. But there aren't just drawbacks. Yes, the first thing that happens with any new technology is scammers. Doesn't matter
scammers
what it is.
And porn.
Scammers depending on the technology.
And numerous times, folks, believe it or not, the technology comes from the porn.
Both Blu-ray and VHS.
GIF sequences.
Yeah.
Like that's how it started on the internet. was
but the reason that Beta and HD DVD both failed is neither one would license the technology for adult content.
Yeah, VHS completely took over the market, even though Beta had more lines of resolution, was better, all kinds
far
of
superior.
Things.
I mean,
fact that it's even still used in broadcast today, DigiBeta.
Yep.
So, yeah, like still around, not a dead format, not one bit. Yep. So, and
never succeeded in consumer. All technologies end up either in the hands of scammers or porn right off the bat.
Yep.
And you know, you go back to cryptocurrencies when those were new, even modernly, which I find really interesting. There's still a lot of crypto scams. We have a article about a series of them. I did a deep and semi-expensive dive into one of them in particular.
Really?
Which was, yeah, I actually spent money on it. I like fell for the scam because I needed to understand how it worked.
Yeah.
And then wrote a whole big thing on it. And I'm married and I maintain a Tinder profile, specifically to keep up to date on this particular scam.
Wow.
Because that's where it came across was through Tinder. Hey, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a software engineer. What do you do? Oh, I'm an interior decorator, but I dabble with, as soon as that comes out.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. Don't fall for it. So it was this platform where if you invest right, you do this at the right time, you'll get gains and whatever.
Yeah.
And so, it wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't into four digits, but I did put money into it because I needed to understand the chain of custody and how it worked. And, if your friend says, okay, the good trading window is coming up. So when I tell you to hit go, okay, and you do, and it runs for however long, and then when it's done, it comes back and goes, oh, you had an 18% gain, which is obviously nonsense. Anybody with half a brain looks at that and goes, well, if the cryptocurrency didn't move 18%, of course that's stupid. But that wasn't the point in the moment I was trying to learn. But if you then did it without your friend, you always lost money.
Interesting.
So you had to be there because your friend was the one that had done all the research and he knows when the thing and what, which in reality, all it is on the back end, they're hitting a button saying now is a success. And when you hit go, the success comes through.
Yeah.
And if they haven't hit the button on the back, then it's not going to be a success so that you gain trust with the person.
Mm.
It was really interesting. It was a wild. And then once you've made your money and you want to extract it, they're like, oh, well, you have to have this much money in your account before you can take any money out. And you go, oh, well, that is idiotic. But it was a really interesting experience to go down this very deep rabbit hole. And now we're seeing those kinds of things come over. From crypto, we're now seeing them come over to AI with the fake kidnappings. And your grandkid is in Cancun and needs money and all that stuff. It's all come over to AI and they're also using it in your standard Nigerian scams.
All
of that stuff is also now being AI powered. But that shouldn't turn off the whole concept in the same way that we didn't turn it all off immediately with crypto.
Yeah,
though the whole concept itself is a little scammy, but that's its own conversation.
Well, it took me a long time to key into crypto and the whole concept. It wasn't until I mined crypto, honestly, that I understood crypto and really got a much better understanding of blockchain and trust of it and trust of the technology. Yeah. Like now I can't say that 5 years ago, 6 years ago, pre-pandemic, that I would have been a fan of a digital ID. where you could possibly vote with your ID, things like that. But if it's cryptoed and things are behind a blockchain wall and everything's blockchained, you're talking about a layer of security at that point that is honestly way more secure than your actual license in your pocket. So
it's still digital.
It is still digital. It's all still digital.
Again, I'm the one that carries in case the coffee pot makes the wrong noise.
Yeah.
So the microwave beeps one too many times.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible example, despite all that is around me.
Yeah. No, and I get that. I get that.
I have a physical kill switch for the LEDs in the wall.
Right?
I don't trust nobody.
Yeah. That was honestly one of the trippiest experiences I ever saw was at a White Hat hacking conference at UT when I first moved here. It was in the beginning stages of like Bluetooth light bulbs, things like that.
Uh-huh.
The beginning of IoT. You remember that? Yep. That buzzword? Like you're saying, AI is going away.
That's totally gone.
IoT is way gone. Like you don't hear about the IoT buzzer, the Internet of Things, because we just live in it now.
Exactly.
We just live in it. It's just a commonplace thing.
The technology and the concept has found its way into the world, and now we don't need a stupid buzzword term for it.
And that's just it. But I saw literally a guy like, hey, look, here's a Bluetooth controlled light, things like that. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And then he hacked into a home network with it.
Yeah.
That it was on. And it was like, oh, snap. Like, he snatched right onto that and dialed right into a net computer that was on stage and started controlling it. And that was just mind numbing to me to see that like, wow. If it is connected, it is vulnerable. That's just the fact of it. And it's kind of like, even the whole concept, there was a study done a while back, that if you have purchased anything online since like 2009, you are fully compromised. Like your information's been bought and sold. Only question is whether or not it's used.
Right.
But even the fact of your state sells it. You know, you go out and get your new driver's license. Like that's sold. When we moved into this house, I remember telling my wife, tell all of our creditors where we're moving. Do not go fill out the form and she asked me, like, did you fill out the form? I'm like, I'm not filling out any form to let the post office know I'm moving. I will let the Secretary of State know personally. I'll let everybody know. Personally, in writing or by email, that this is my new address. I'll go into the credit card. I'll change it, whatever. But sure enough, we showed up at the new place and there was mail waiting with her name on it. That wasn't like, hey, yeah, here's a, it was straight up junk mail. Those things are AI'd now.
It all wasn't a Val pack that said to our neighbors.
Yeah. Which hot tip, everybody, if you get those things with like, you know, the self-addressed stamped envelope, fill it full of money-saving coupons and send it back because they're charged by weight.
Yes, they
so
are.
You know. So you'll eventually stop getting coupon things in the mail.
But, yes, you will.
You
can call up and get mean with the person who owns the company. That's how I got rid of a neighborhood newsletter.
I told a religious affiliation once that I was dead so they would stop contacting me. But that was my fault for ordering their book online, for ordering their book off TV at like 2 a.m. They got the information at that point. But boy, howdy, did they call regularly. And I was like, I really just wanted to read your book.
If anybody has ever wronged you, this particular religious affiliation that I think everybody knows who we're talking about, they are happy for you to go to their website and provide a phone number or email address, and they will be to contact that person constantly.
All the time.
I've never done that.
All the time. But that's
a friend and I definitely did not come up with the idea of a website that we did not build. Truly.
Good.
I thought about it. That would allow you to fill out information on an enemy and have them subscribe to all of those things.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
All through an email address that they don't control.
Yeah, right. But that's just it. All these kind of things are being done by AI now. Like I use AI to write snippets of code, that kind of stuff, that I then go through and curate and check out.
Snippets.
Not whole. Yeah. No. It's like, do specifically this thing and that's it.
Visual Studio, the Copilot, that's built into Visual Studio.
Yeah.
I haven't messed with 2026 yet. That came out, I think, over the weekend. I haven't messed with it yet because I don't have any clients I'm working on. So
yeah,
to hell with software right now. I used it a lot, like to clean up code.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So I don't know if you saw my comment on LinkedIn, but somebody had commented about, you know, using AI for software. Mm. And I came in and said, here's the thing. It's great if you're a senior software engineer, because we know what to ask. We know what to look for. We know when things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
However, my last project I did with my former employer, good riddance, with my former employer, which you will not be able to figure out unless you actually know me, because I never put it on LinkedIn. The last project I did with them, I had his title was senior, but everybody in India puts senior as their title. I had a junior software engineer working with us that we discovered had started using Copilot way too much and allowing it to do too much. We were just converting a Xamarin app into a MAUI app. And so view models and stuff had to be changed almost not at all. Mm. And yet what I was getting was complete reworks with comments. I'm like, oh, this pain is out there writing, using Copilot to restructure the entire damn view model and introducing so many bugs.
Yeah.
On a project where theoretically we should have had no bugs, because we were just converting Xamarin to MAUI. Yes, there were going to be things where older paradigms had changed, whatever. But overall, there should not have been behavioral bugs. And I was getting nothing but behavioral bugs. And we didn't figure it out until it was too late. That's what he was doing and ruining my day.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's part of why I'm not with that company anymore.
Well,
because that was forced on me.
And not only that, but also possibly causing some major back-end security issues, you know, where should that account on that AI that he's using get hacked or anything like that, people now have access to source codes that he's writing with it.
So the Copilot that's built into Visual Studio doesn't hold that in your account, fortunately. Doesn't hold conversation history.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness. For exactly this reason. It's the only reason we were allowed to use it on client projects at all, is because it doesn't hold a chat history that you or I could go into our account and see.
Yes.
Thankfully.
Interesting. Yeah. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. It's not like regular Copilot. It's not like the Copilot that's sitting on your taskbar right now.
Yeah.
It's a very different Copilot from that. Back to our early conversation.
Yeah.
Very narrowly trained.
Yeah.
It's trained on wide information just to understand language and the questions, but you can't ask it questions about the weather in Zambia today.
Yeah.
Right? It has no idea. It's not trained on any of that. It's just for the natural language processing part of it.
Yep.
So that you can ask, what's the best way for me to restructure this block?
Yep.
And it to know what it is. But as soon as the conversation is done, the conversation is done.
Interesting.
And it's all contextual. It's based on the file you have open and all kinds of stuff. It's actually really great and surprisingly secure for, something out of Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one of my favorite AIs that I liked it so much that I actively bought a lifetime subscription to it. I don't know if they're still offering the deal that they were, but it was like $300 for a lifetime. And I was like, absolutely, because I'm going to use this all the damn time. SciSummary. I talk about it all the time. I am not an affiliate of SciSummary, folks. It just has a warm, beautiful place in my heart. Because, literally, it is exactly what we're talking about, where it is a controlled data pool. As you can see there, it only summarizes what you give it. So you could give it a series of URLs. Let's say the example I give all the time is if I was doing a scholarly research paper or speech on liver disease, I could feed it 20 studies on liver disease and 15 articles from various trusted URLs. And okay. Have it give me a 1,500 word summary and 10 bullet points. It only draws from the data pool that you've provided it. It doesn't go anywhere else. It doesn't look across the internet. It's firewalled to what you provide it. So
it's trained wide for language and trained narrow for context.
Yeah. Even the fact of one of my favorite things about it is I can take a PDF of an ebook that somebody sends me as a guest and I can throw it in. I'll still read the first 100 pages like I always do, but I can have it summarize that into 500 words with 10 bullet points.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, things like that where it's like, boom, and it's only drawing from that document.
So you know? I use a tool. We actually used it for CES this year.
Mm-hmm.
I might be an affiliate, but
that's okay. If you have an affiliate code and you trust it, man, I trust you. Feel free to put that affiliate code out there. We'll pop it up on screen, brother.
I actually do. So it's a company called Swell, swellai.com. And you can use Plunkets as the code. I can send you my resource document too, for later. You can feed it. So this is the same thing. It's trained wide for language and narrow for context. It's trained on you. On individual media files. The only context of the world that it understands is the transcript of the media file you give it. So this is how I survived CES this year.
Oh my God, man. Yeah. Being able to give it a 5-minute, 10-minute interview with somebody and it calls all that data for you?
Yes. And it's incredible. It builds the transcript, which first and foremost for content creators, awesome.
Yeah.
Having a transcript, and it's so much better. I've used other platforms. I'm a big fan of Otter, right?
Same. Same. I love my Otter AI.
This is so much better. This does such a better job at building the transcription than Otter does, and it gives you more options for exporting it, so you can actually use it for television if you wanted, which is pretty cool. So you can have it do proper closed captioning for TV. You get SRT and everything out of it. That's incredible.
That's huge, especially for content creators that are putting out movies, film, that kind of stuff, because trying to get an actual closed caption file is hell on wheels, man.
Insane.
It ain't fun.
So I feel like Otter gets you to about the 92 to 95% mark.
Yep.
I feel like Swell gets me to the 98.
Wow.
And if that was all I got out of it, rock on. But it's not what I get out of it. I also get suggestions for titles.
Yep.
Based on platform, though. So it'll give me the body that I should put on for YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn, and they're different.
Nice.
It'll give you a Twitter post if you're a whatever they call it, premium member.
Yeah.
Or it'll give you a thread if you're not.
Wow.
And every individual post is optimized in the moment for what will get traction if you post it right now.
And, you know, that's one of the things that I love about Opus Clip. I'm a huge fan of Opus Clip.
So this does that too.
Oh,
This has that built in as well. It'll give you clips.
Wow. Wow. This is cool, yeah. Man.
It'll write full articles.
I saw
based
that.
Based on the transcript and based only on the transcript. You can have it go wide and say, okay, so this particular interview is about monster illuminescence. And it'll go, you can have it go wide and start pulling information that Jen may have missed. Hmm. What is the pricing on this product? Because she didn't know at the time, but now we do, and it's out there. So you can have it go pull additional, or you can tell it stick only to what we talked about. Don't go outside the box.
Wow. Wow. The blog writing is awesome. I like
that. Oh, and they're so good, dude.
Wow. That is a massive game. I want to thank you for hipping me to that, because I am definitely going to be using a brother's code for that. What's your code for that again?
Plughitz. PLUGHITZ.
Yep. There you go. So just like it is on our screen right there, folks. And that's just it. The idea of being afraid of these things. It's like being afraid. For me, it's like being afraid of a new kind of air hammer. You know?
Yeah. There are places and times when it's a problem.
Sure.
Right?
Like, I don't think that we should be turning over nuclear codes to AI. Nope.
Absolutely not.
Don't think we should. But I also don't think Nike should be trusting their server security to AI either. You know,
right.
Not that they are. They aren't. If you're out there holding Nike stock, just so you know, I don't want them to like tank overnight because Chris Jordan's saying that they're using AI for their security. They aren't.
Yeah, that's not a real life example.
Just giving it a hypothetical example, you know, but things like that. Yes, we should rein things in. Is the next singularity coming in the next 10 years? No. I don't think we're up against that. I don't think it's going to become sentient. As we talked about in our interview last week, I don't think it's going to become a remote viewer at any point. You know,
despite that Google engineer.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you be using it to generate targets, to cull data from sessions? Absolutely. Could you use it as a monitor if you trained it right? Totally. But it's not going to connect to the non-local consciousness of your subconscious and garner data in that same kind of way, because it's not subconscious.
Yeah. So two things. One, I just sent you the link to the content guide.
Okay.
This is what we use for our class. We do once a quarter. Cool. Here in Tampa. But the biggest problem, there's two main problems. One is usage, but that's every technology, right?
Yeah.
The Chinese created gunpowder, and why? For fireworks, right? It's all about usage. We saw it and went, got a different idea for that. So same thing, right? The same technology can be used to clone your voice so that articles in the knowledge base can be read as you, or to try and get your parents to send money claiming that your kid has been kidnapped, right?
Yeah.
That's all about usage, and there's nothing we can do about that. You know, Oppenheimer famously immediately regretted creating the atom bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the first test. It's like, okay, this was a mistake.
Yeah, yeah. Within moments of the bright flash, like, this was bad.
We shouldn't have done this. This is a mistake. But it's all about usage, because we can also power entire countries off of the same exact concept. On the other hand, there's training, right? And that's the other big thing here. When things like OpenAI are trying to steal the entirety of the internet.
Yeah.
And allowing for copyright infringement based on that.
Yep.
Now we're into trouble, right?
Yeah.
Because there's this interesting in the US, there's this really interesting Supreme Court case that's already on this topic, not about training AI, but on scraping data. There's two cases and they're conflicting. There was the case that made it from about LinkedIn. Microsoft had sued somebody who was scraping data off of LinkedIn. And the decision was, if it's public, if it's posted publicly, it can be scraped. If it's posted privately, it cannot.
Yeah.
But then Meta sued a company who was scraping location data off of Instagram posts and creating heat maps or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. I have articles on both of them, but they're in the past far enough that it's not on the top of my mind. Meta's suit was successful for doing the exact same thing. So we have these two court cases here in the US and they're conflicting. And now we've got all these lower courts weighing in weird, weird ways, muddying the water even more. Interestingly, Sarah Silverman may be the one who actually gets a precedent on AI training.
Mm.
Because she's part of a lawsuit against, I think, OpenAI, actually.
Yeah.
ChatGPT is capable of summarizing her book, but her book has never been made publicly accessible.
Yeah.
And yet it read it somehow. So we're going to find out how OpenAI is training its system at the very least based on discovery on this case.
Yeah.
In the same way that we learned all kinds of things about Steam because of the epic Apple Google Supreme Court case. We learned all kinds of weird stuff about how Steam works, which whatever. But we're going to at least learn how OpenAI trains based on discovery in this case. But my guess is there's going to be precedent. There's no way this doesn't go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
If Congress doesn't act ahead of time, there's no way this case doesn't go to the Supreme Court because you got Simon and Schuster involved in this. No way. No way we don't get a precedent out of this. But
and hopefully
we need to be dealing with ownership.
Yeah.
Properly.
Yeah. Well,
dealing with ownership.
And Midjourney went through stuff. I love my Midjourney and I pay for my Midjourney level so that I have rights to use all my images and nobody else can use them. Now, could they use my prompt to train things for other stuff? Absolutely. That's their right to use my prompt, you know, in that kind of way. But they can't use my art. And that's different and that's cool. But they were definitely involved in a case with Disney for allowing Disney properties and the likeness of them to be used. Now, granted, folks, just so you're aware, Disney properties put out a huge thing in the comic book world because they put out a thing saying that, you know, they would be suing for copyright infringement for fan art.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a good grip of people out there on artist rows at comic cons that make a good amount of money, like doing likenesses of Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck, you know, have you, that kind of stuff, putting them in like Pulp Fiction, that kind of thing. But you're talking about an intellectual property. And good on them for getting the wrangle on that is what I say, you know, because if you're out there doing that, then you are actually making your living off somebody else's art and that kind of way. It may be fan art and a dedication and all that kind of stuff. However, and the whole reason that made a big kerfuffle is, of course, because they've purchased the Marvel properties.
Yeah.
So that means like, yeah, your favorite dude doing an Iron Man ain't happening anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true. But when it comes to AI, so one of the things that we talk about in the production class is that if you don't know how it's been trained, you don't know if you are opening yourself up to liability.
Yeah,
because there are people who have been sued not knowing that what something like Midjourney has created is similar to or in the style of there.
Yep.
We'll use the Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
Which was a trend 6 months ago.
Yep.
Time is weird. I think it was 6 months ago.
Close to. But they were one of them that opened up suit as well.
because their stuff is not available for training on.
Yeah.
So how does ChatGPT know what the style is?
Yeah.
Right? So that created all kinds of problems. And if you had created something and it had used this, and you aren't an anime person, and it had created an image that was in the Studio Ghibli style, you're still legally liable.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
You prompted it. You prompted it. And you said Studio Ghibli style.
No, even if you didn't.
Oh.
Even if you didn't. But the thing that you asked for, ChatGPT decided that that was the style that was going to come out.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You're still legally liable for the copyright infringement, even though you didn't know it happened, because ignorance is not a defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And you know, once again, it brings up a whole noodle bowl full of noodles to think about, and the way that these things cross over. Because
see, now I have to have ramen tonight. Thank you. Continue.
Because, well, it's just the fact of, yes, it is part of your intellectual property. Even the way that you think is part of your intellectual property. So, yep. And you're responsible for that. So yeah, you know, your search history, things like that. And there's numerous, case points that have happened from stuff like that where no, like you are responsible for your search history. They use that kind of stuff to convict people all the time. So. And
the Charlie Kirk assassin.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. And the whole idea of AI being used for nefarious purposes, once again, it's something that you're not going to get the good without the bad. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. Hey,
battery powered drills are used for bad.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that Black and Decker is doing something wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Black and Decker might be doing other things wrong. That's not my realm. But that's that guy on Instagram.
Yeah.
Who looks like he's 11 years old but has a master's degree in cybersecurity.
Yeah.
That's his realm. He's the one that knows if Black and Decker is doing something weird. But in the case of a handheld drill, yeah. Can it be used to break into a bank? Well, sure. Is that what it's for? No.
The example of extreme things like that I give all the time is post-Boston bombing, William Sonoma removing pressure cookers from their catalog. Like, we will no longer sell pressure cookers. It's like, whoa, wow. That's only been around since, like, you know, early 1900s.
Yeah. Is this some sort of an admission device from you?
yeah, exactly. Where it's like, what is that about? That's like Sears saying, I'm not going to sell a hammer anymore.
Right.
You know, or.
Well, in fairness, they did sell Craftsman. So, you know.
They did.
I don't even know if Sears is around anymore.
But the only thing that is Sears Craftsman stores.
Okay.
The Sears hardware. Or is the only thing that's still around because of Craftsman. So,
which they don't own anymore.
Yeah.
They don't own Craftsman or Kenmore anymore.
Yeah. It's that example of how do you use the tool?
Right.
Is the point here. And the fact of you don't have to fear AI in that greater sense. You don't have to fear it taking over the world. You don't have to fear it becoming uber intelligent overnight. Just for the prime example of a Turing test, I guarantee you that a Turing test is way different than it was 40 years ago, man. Just once again, refer back to our conversation about elderly people being taken in by AI bots on Facebook. Okay.
Yeah.
The average Turing test as to whether or not somebody's a human. My favorite is the video of the kid with the robot pushing I'm not a robot on the the automated bot that just pushes the I'm not a robot on the computer.
did you see the thing where there was a car dealership that made a guy check the I'm not a robot box on a printed form?
That's my jam. But that's just it. That's just it. It's the fact of bots are out there. They're going to be out there. And
there's no stopping it.
Nope.
Just like
there's no putting like the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Just like Oppenheimer. It's already happened. We're already here. And it was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
Where, ironically, where we are today is Steve Ballmer's fault. But,
well,
and that might sound like a joke, but it's not. Modern AI is entirely because of Steve Ballmer. If he hadn't said inside of Microsoft, hey, I think we're thinking about AI wrong. What if we think about it like this? If he hadn't done that, somebody would have somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes, we're here technically because of Ballmer. We are here technically because of Steve Jobs. But
yeah.
We're not. If he hadn't come up with the horrible all glass brick, somebody else would have convinced us the buttons were bad.
The example I give all the time is thank NASA for all of that, for all of our miniaturization and everything. It's how do we get it to space? Sure. How do we get it up there? And the whole rocket equation of every pound of payload takes 2 pounds of fuel, and that includes the 2 pounds of fuel in the payload.
Indeed.
So yeah, it's that metric rocket equation of like we want to get a 3,000 pound capsule up to space. It's gonna take a metric more than a ton of fuel to do it. Yep. Plus the weight of the rocket that holds the fuel, which means mm-hmm. more fuel, which means more rocket.
And the growing size of the fuel tank.
Exactly.
To hold the yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. That's what we're up against with AI. The fact of like in order to do more AI and better AI, we need bigger data centers. You know, we now see finally aqua cooled where China and Japan are dropping them out in the ocean to cool them. Things like that where it's just constant cooling of the chips.
In fairness, Microsoft has had an underwater data center for years.
They have.
And they repurposed it to Copilot.
And the beautiful example that I give all the time is especially the Microsoft Research AI. It happened when Todd and I were on air at CES. We talked about it last time because I want to say it was within 24 hours that their research AI found 10,000 organic compounds that could replace lithium batteries.
Yeah.
It was like a decade worth of hard lab research that it did within one day.
We had somebody on at CES 2020, which was in person. It's the last in-person thing.
Yeah.
I think it was 2020. They had an early AI that was trained specifically to look for medical compounds.
Mm.
And so it was able to come up with the idea of a molecule, run statistical tests against it, and then spit out whether or not this was worth exploring as a medicine.
Wow. Wow.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly, you said we've got more data centers coming. Data centers are the new nuclear power plants.
Yep.
There's an article. Oh, I don't think I've told you.
What?
We may have talked about this on a previous show that didn't exist yet. So years ago, I had signed up for one of the tellies, which Kirk and I had learned about during an episode.
Okay.
On GNC Weekly, he used to do a WTF topic at the end. He'd never tell me what it was. And it was a free television, a free 50-something inch 4K television. It had a second screen at the bottom that would have a little ad in the corner, but it also had news and sports and all kinds of things.
All right.
While he was talking, I signed up for it. It finally showed up last Christmas.
Cool.
Several years later, it finally showed up. And so I get news articles from like TechCrunch and Wired and stuff. And one of the things that has shown up over the past week, certainly the weekend, the headline is the data center resistance has arrived. I think it's from Wired. And it's a really interesting article.
Huh.
Data centers are the new nuclear power plants. People are protesting in the streets when they pitch a new data center. The same way that they protest if somebody announces a new nuclear power plant.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there have been all kinds of them, all kinds of protests like that here in Texas.
Yeah.
Because of the new data centers coming in.
Because Texas is data center headquarters.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all about it. We'll throw money. We'll let you throw money at anything center. In Texas as long as we get money for it.
Fair enough.
We don't care.
I rented space in a data center in Texas.
Well, and that's just it. It's one of those that I know Facebook was looking at restarting an old nuclear power plant to power one of their data centers.
Microsoft already is. 3 Mile.
Yep. I was going to say they are redoing 3 Mile Island. So,
but they're reactivating the reactor that was active until 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was simply decommissioned out of nuclear fear. Yep. But I guess Microsoft's like, well, we're fighting we're fighting the battle on data centers anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll just lump it all together.
That's right. You can hate us all in one spot. But it is going to eventually come to a head. Don't get me wrong. Quantum computing is steps away. There was the article that I just saw the other day and posted about the new NVIDIA computer that came out. That's like $3,000. That's full AI and basically your own private AI at home.
Mm-hmm. There's a number of those. That's what the Nooks have become.
Yeah.
Intel gave up on the Nooks just in time for them to become important.
And I'm trying to remember what it was. I want to say it was like a petaflop.
There was something like that.
A petaflop on this new NVIDIA computer that was just like, what?
But it's very focused and it's running on very specific hardware.
Yes. Yes. It's running on very specific architecture, all kinds of things. A DGX Spark is what it is. Yeah. It is a sexy little machine. I'm all about it. Let's see. There it is. So, yeah, it's a pretty little thing and only costs like $4,000. And when you think about that, and I know it sounds unreachable, folks, like $4,000, feel free to go out and buy a Mac.
Right, I was going to say.
Feel free to hop out, buy yourself a Mac laptop that's just general walk out the door. You're going to be spending $3,000. Your iPhone is $3,000. Smooth. You know, so the fact that you have a dedicated AI power in that kind of way, like petaflop of data at your disposal, that's just massive. I'd have to do that. What is that? That's a 100,000 terabytes. Is that right? A petaflop?
No, 1,000.
1,000. 1,000. That's still a lot.
Yeah.
For the average user, and the idea that you can use this for your own AI generative purposes, you can use it for image generation, video generation, things like that. When you're talking about not having to pay a service to do that, that in and of itself becomes a metric savings.
Yeah, because the thing that we look at AI right now, you know, ChatGPT has a free version, you know, Copilot for most people is free because most people have at least one paid Microsoft account either through their Office or whatever.
Yeah.
I have far too many. But this is not how it's going to work. There is a financial reckoning coming and it's coming fast. Yeah. That's going to be the burst in the bubble. These companies cannot keep giving this stuff away for free or cheap.
Because
it's not free or cheap to do. Everybody's losing money right now. And in the same way that the early 3D televisions
yep.
or the MetaQuest 2 is way less expensive than the 3.
Yeah.
Right? Once the bubble bursts, so will the price.
Well, and it's the same thing that we've talked about so many times with our friend Todd before his passing, when it came to podcasting, which is be careful where you send your listeners. Be careful where you put your stuff. Beware of anything that is free. If it's free, true. A, you're giving away SEO that's valuable and is your footprint on the internet. Mm-hmm. And you're just giving it to a company that good luck ever defeating them the day that you decide to take it seriously and own your SEO.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, you're subjecting your listeners to having their data taken by a free platform.
Yep.
You
because
know?
if the platform is free, you are the product.
That's right. That's right. You, your opinion, what you do on that platform, everything else is the product. And that was something that was just brought about. There was a huge, massive uprising with creators. And I'm trying to remember who it was that came out and said, oh, it was a file sharing service that was like, we have right to generatively AI anything that's transferred on. It was WeTransfer, come to think of it, just recently.
Makes sense.
And that was WeTransfer is used all across the entertainment industry, all across the entertainment industry as a work bucket where it's like, let's swap our files. Let's do this. We can work on files in real time and transfer them back and forth in large file format. You know, all kinds of things. But man, when you're talking about data being able to be taken, data being able to be copied, your artwork that you're transferring in that kind of way, being able to be AI'd and taken,
you're talking off of
major studios that's happening to, you know, and that was huge. That just hit like all of 2-3 weeks ago. And I was like, oh, you nefarious MFers. Like that is so down and dirty on the back. It was bad enough. I fought Zoom for the longest time, dude. You know me. I'm a Skyper. I loved my Skype. I love you, Skype. I should have like a tiny little Skype tomb over here. I've been such a Skype fan for so long. The audio was so nice and uncompressed. But the main reason that I fought Zoom was because as soon as you turned it on, it's recording you. Whether you hit record or not, and you're being recorded to train their AIs.
Yep.
That was part of their end-user licensing agreement. So
there's also the issue of the security problems they've had in the past.
Yep. Yeah, well,
God forbid you use a Mac. Once you've installed it once, people can hack into your computer.
Yeah.
You can't uninstall it. It does not go away.
That's right. Uh-oh. Yeah, you can delete it all day long. You can take it to the trash can. You can uninstall it. There's still root files there.
Yeah.
And that's just
I am on a burner device right now to do this video. Because I won't install Zoom on anything that's a primary device. Only on a device that'll get reformatted at the end of the night.
Yeah, right. Only on something that's going to have regular wipes or mirroring done, you know, in that kind of way.
I hope y'all are listening to me.
That's right. That's right. I hope
I don't get on here very often, Zoom. I hope you're listening right now. Remember that I avoid you guys like the plague.
Yep. And I have told so many people. Where it's like, they're like, oh my God, are you serious? I'm like, yes, yes. So if you're doing your therapy via Zoom, stop. Like, just stop. Stop right now. Because all of your intimate thoughts that you've shared with your therapist have all been
recorded not private
by AI. They are no longer private. So those are some of the worrisome things when it comes to AI, is that privacy violation. That idea of, yes, you're... Your conversations have been listened to by AI on the phone since like the 60s and 70s, folks. Just so you know, that's how they had those mysterious systems back in the day of like, you talk about shooting the president on the phone and the Secret Service is alerted. They weren't tapping your phone necessarily, but they were definitely listening for hot words.
Yep.
And there were whole banks of machines doing that under military bases, things like that. So these AIs have been out in the wild for a long time for various uses. They've just hit our uses.
There's a particular individual who is currently and has been for a while hiding in a Russian embassy for exposing one of the more recent iterations of this technology.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Good old Ed Snowden. He is a dream interview. I would love to interview him, but I know that IPs would be immediately traced if that were if that were the case. But to that point of the fact of it was every phone, every email, like international and domestic. So it was all encompassing, and it was not hard for them to do because of the IoT, the Internet of Things, the connectivity. You know, it was revealed in 2012 by the head of Samsung that yes, your TV is listening to you.
Oh, I remember that one.
That's how we push programmatic advertising to you over streaming services and over localized TV. Yep. You know,
there was the ad platform a year and a half ago that made the public claim that Meta has been listening on your phone the whole time. And Meta says, we've never done that.
Yeah.
First of all, of course they are.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have no need for access to my microphone.
Right.
Unless I'm using the app that's using the microphone.
They have lower level access than that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
They have access direct from Apple to APIs that you and I don't have access to.
There's one.
They don't have to ask permission for what they're up to.
Oh, yeah.
But Meta says that this ad agency is a liar.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's one I'm getting ready to do right now, Scott, with two cameras that match, one on infrared, one on regular with time code, but actively showing how Insta takes pictures of your face while you scroll.
And
buddy, it's creepy to see. But if feel free to take a baby monitor or anything like that with just an infrared camera and watch somebody scroll through Insta, and about every 3 minutes you will see it like it's done with infrared light, because it literally looks like a flash from the camera on the phone.
It's actually using the Kinect sensor that's on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because most phones have essentially a Kinect sensor.
Yep. Yeah. And it's reading the biometric data of your face, the dilation of your pupils, the way your cheeks are moving, all kinds of things to see whether or not you like or dislike what's being fed to you. Yep. And that's just creepy enough, that AI.
our friend Terry has it right. She's got a sticker over the camera on her phone.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I don't blame anybody that still does that, that puts a Band-Aid over the camera on your computer or anything like that. Because it was right up around 2012 also that it was released that like the FBI was putting tracking software into laptops that hit the shelves, things like that, where they were putting in backdoor software and intercepting computers and installing it. That one was wild.
So I don't have all the proof, but I know that that's not exactly the theme of this show.
It always becomes the theme of this show, Scott.
you like to dive into conspiracy theories. There is some evidence to suggest, and the printer companies all say that it's not true, and the CIA says it's not true, but the reason that your yellow ink goes down, even if you only ever print in black and white, and the reason why you have to have the color cartridges installed, is because the yellow ink is used to essentially print fingerprints that you can't see on every page.
Ooh. Ooh. I can see that.
That's why the yellow ink goes down specifically when magenta and cyan don't, but yellow does.
Yeah.
Even when you're printing it all black, because the yellow is always being used.
Interesting. Yeah, there it is, talking about routers having spyware installed. And
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. it's pretty fascinating to see that kind of stuff that, yeah, we have that, on all sorts of things. I mean, here it is from network computing talking about the same thing. So that's your routers, stuff like that. It's fascinating to see those things. And we regularly, opt into these programs, man.
Yep.
It's hidden in 30, 40 pages of that accept and agree document that we just scroll past and click, you know. I belong to a lot of alternative sources, and regularly is the fact that I hear the complaint of, you know, oh, you know, they're crushing free speech. I'm like, on their private platform? You agreed to the rules of the conversation.
Unless there's pressure from the government.
Unless there's pressure from the government. Which,
because that's the difference.
Yep.
You know, it's private real estate.
Yeah.
I can kick you off. You cannot come protest in my driveway.
Yep. That's right.
You can do it on the sidewalk, but you cannot protest in my driveway.
Do it on the city easement.
Exactly.
Just you can pass do that. The fire hydrant.
Although, in fairness, I think in Florida, you have to be in the on the road,
yeah,
in a residential area. It was a response to a particular religious,
yeah,
organization.
Yeah. And you know, that's just it. There are numerous AIs that do that kind of stuff. There are numerous AIs that bring these things about that yeah, I mean, I remember the algorithm when YouTube Kids first started, that was feeding Alex Jones and InfoWars to YouTube Kids.
It was more important than that. Yes, that was happening, but there were worse things than that happening.
There were much worse things than that.
It was the videos designed for YouTube Kids, yeah, being fed to others and allowing them to comment. Nope. Terrible.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. And that was all AI driven. All of that was algorithmic. All that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to see how these things are used, leveraged, to, yeah, change, shape communities, all kinds of things. Yeah. So,
I mean, just look at TikTok.
Yeah.
Cause that's all TikTok is.
Yeah. Yeah. And the example I give regularly, it's been pretty well proven over the last couple of years, the number of Chinese bots and Russian bots that are out there on social media, literally just commenting on things to, yeah, poke and start fires within communities and,
yep,
you know, poke and start fires amongst ourselves in this country so that it causes hard lines of division. So it's fascinating to me how these things are used and utilized. I want to thank you for coming on tonight, digging deep on this and going all kinds of places with this, Scott. It's always great talking with you. And we definitely need to have it more frequent where we have this conversation about these things, because it's starting to pop up and crop up a whole lot more than it did when we started talking about 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed.
So.
Yeah. This is going to become a regular important thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Because we're starting to see it show up in new and weird places, to go back to the IoT, right?
Yep.
Amazon made an Echo clock for the kitchen, right?
Yep.
That was the height of absurdity at that point, right? And since then, the term went away. And we're going to see that term go away, but we're also going to see some weird experimentation. We saw some at CES this year, 26. I guarantee I'm going to get some pitches for some weird stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hey,
and we're going to have it on.
Yep.
Cause here's the thing. It's all me now.
Right?
TPN's my problem now.
Oh, so. Times they are changing. Well, so, but
we're going to lean into the weird a little bit. We're going to have some more of the weird,
I'm down,
like, mad scientist stuff on.
I'm down with
it. In the past.
I'm down with it. Because, yeah, like even right here in Austin, I just brought up the recent CBS article. This made national news, that there's a couple of schools here in town, a charter school that is using AI to write the curriculums, all kinds of things, and actively having some great success with the kids.
Right up until glue in the mac and cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
that will always be my example because it's so funny.
Yeah, precisely. That wild hallucination engine that AI has inside of it that is programmed to kind of be like human imagination, but just really goes weird. Really
yes,
goes
it
weird.
Does.
Oh, and, man.
So my attorney talks about AI being used by attorneys all the time.
Yeah.
And the weird, like, quotes from cases that didn't happen. And
yep.
Just.
Oh, yeah. No, like I had, God rest his soul, Dr. Robert Duncan was a good friend of this show. I loved having him on because he was an AI algorithm writer years ago and was recruited by the CIA to have things written. And when he found out what his AIs and his algorithms were being used for, he left, became whistleblower. But I had him on one time to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And I had AI write. I used to have a segment back in the Dudes and Beer days called Ask Alexa, which I should really reboot. Where I would ask Alexa some of the hard questions that I was going to ask the guest. Like one of my favorites was, you know, about sarsen stones at Stonehenge. And it started giving me information like, oh, they may come from this area and these stones in the circle are different than these. But once I asked, like, what's a megalithic culture? It was like, yeah, you know, I don't really have an answer for that, but I do have a unicorn in a grove. Would you like a unicorn? Like it just totally distracted you with something else because it did not have the answer.
Jingle keys.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was hilarious because it would always end with Alexa just giving you something totally random because it just eventually ran out of answers.
That's great.
But it was hilarious because I had AI write a bio of Dr. Duncan, and it completely had him start this fictitious company that did not exist. And he's like, that company sounds great. Like, I wish I'd have come up with that company. I probably wouldn't be in the money situation I am in life. Like, that's actually a really good idea. I wish I'd have started
funny. But it
totally hallucinated an entire company that he never made and that did not exist. That's what AI does right now. So don't be too afeared, folks. All right. Once again, Scott, it's always great chatting with you, man. Always great catching up. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go, A, to take your AI course. I know it just passed, but I'm sure you have another one coming up, where they can go to keep up with everything that is Plug Hits and F5 Live and everything.
Sure. So, interestingly, since the hurricanes last year, F5 Live has been on and off on hiatus.
Okay.
Because my parents were affected by it and we've been trying to get them back into their home. They're back in their home now. So
good.
And then as soon as I was ready for that, Avram changed jobs. So F5 Live's been on a little bit of a hiatus. It will be back soon. As soon as the upgrade in here is done. But for that, that's a weekly tech show. Avram Pilch, who is now the US editor for The Register.
Oh, wow.
And I talk about the tech news of the week. I imagine his segment will be very different now that he's at The Register. That will be Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can go to f5live.tv/join us. You can read all of our articles, our other shows. We've got a bunch of stuff coming right now. Unboxings. There used to be a giant stack of things to my left that is not there.
Right?
So I just filmed a ton of unboxing videos, I think, last night. Those are all available at plughitslive.com. We have a new series that will be coming sometime at the beginning of next year. We've filmed a pilot for it. Haven't announced it yet. That's as much information as you get. But beginning of next year, that series will be coming out. It's going to be a lot of fun. That'll also be at plughitslive.com. And you can follow me at TTTMABO on most social media or search for my name. Both of them will find me.
Fantastic. Man, thank you so much as always. It's great catching up. Great talking with you. always a fun conversation. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience for this second.
I forgot one last thing.
Go ahead.
CES 2026 is the first full week of January. We will be live with the Tech Podcast Network, as we are every year, from Las Vegas. You'll be able to see that at techpodcasts.com or at plugitslive.com.
And I cannot recommend that coverage enough, folks. If you are a gadget person like me, if you're a technology person like me, tune into that coverage, man. It is like 4 or 5 days of just steady all day long, 8 hours a day. Every 10, 15 minutes, new people coming in with new devices, new technology, new concepts in how to utilize this technology. It's absolutely awesome. And
on average, 125 guests.
Wow. Wow. And it's one of those that even like I go out and cover live shows, stuff like that. And people are like, wow, you know, you did like 12 hours of coverage at MUFON. In one year, I was like, you need to turn into my coverage of CES sometime. And the people that I do that with, because it's on another level. It's like 32 hours of coverage in 4 days. Yep. It's absolutely
with awards
awesome.
And everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's awesomely great. I've always been proud to be a part of it. Thank you for always making us a part of it. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience, Scott. While you are online, checking out everything from plughitslive.com and Scott Ertz, as well as their CES coverage, everybody. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. If you go to the videos page, that's actively where you can see our coverage from the CES live stuff. You can find links to the TPN coverage there as well. You can also find your link to CuriousResearch.org. That's where you can find all kinds of amazing free tools for your paranormal research, things like that. There's all kinds of great links there that'll take you to things to help you visualize the audio that you've captured, help you forensically examine photographs, all kinds of things. All those tools are free. Stop on by, check that out. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time tonight. Thank you for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.